You're listening to episode 11-9 of the Tech Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Robert Desert Eagle Allen. With me today is Sean Nola Kirkland, a.k.a. Dickens.
Yeah, I did that.
We also have, let's go with the literary motif, we also have Samurage Morris Green, a.k.a. Gibson, William Gibson. You read any...
Gibson? Like the drink?
No, William Gibson. I was thinking that he's about the only cyberpunk author I know.
I would have gone with the law angle and made her...
Oh, what's her name? I know. She's from... She used to be a lawyer in San Francisco.
I'm not bringing up any names. It's a good thing we didn't go with that one.
There's also Neal Stephenson. If you had said Neal Stephenson, I would have known who you meant.
You don't know William Gibson. Okay.
But we do know the Clive Cussler of video games, Jeremy Lawman Lamont.
I was going to go with Orson Scott Card.
I was going to go with Orson Welles.
No.
And also in the pack, we have Eric Blue Swim, a.k.a. Faulkner.
Faulkner? What the hell kind of name is that?
It's because you're from the South.
Faulkner? Sean. I don't even know her.
Wow. And from there, let's hit some impressions. Sage, I'm going to give it to you right off the bat. What do you got for me?
Really? I have a new computer. Yay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. My rig is sexy. My ex built it, unfortunately. I wish I could take credit, but he sold it to me right before he left for Seattle, and it's got the crazy, I feel like I talked about this already, but it's got the crazy case that has like five fans and LED light enough that you could like put a small cat inside and no one would ever see them again. Mm-hmm. And it's got ports for liquid cooling, which I'll never do because I don't need to, but I could. And it will run everything, so all those games like Skyrim and Witcher 2 that I couldn't play on my old piece of crap, I can now play.
He sold it to you? He didn't give it to you?
Isn't that
it's
wonderful?
Her ex.
He sold it.
That's kind of a dick move.
He was trying to make money because he's moving, and he sold it to me.
Wow.
So basically, you buy the computer and you help get rid of him at the same time. Kind of a win-win situation?
Sure. No, I mean, whatever.
Awesome.
He's the one that it's complicated. Whatever. The point is that I'm single, so shout out to Sector. And there you go. And, so no, it plays games like a dream. Oh, I actually have got... I haven't had a lot of time to play things because it's that time of year where thing is fucking terrible. But I did get it's a girl joke, I get it. It's
episode's already dirtier than last one's.
No, I had a huge 30-minute presentation today that I stayed up all night doing, so I'm tired and inarticulate and I have something due at midnight. But anyway, I played Universe Sandbox. Have you guys checked that out yet?
Haven't even heard of it, tell me.
Oh, well, it was on...
Go ahead.
Are you going to make that dirty?
No.
So Steam was having... Well, they may still be having cyber sales for this week because of Cyber Monday. But Steam was having a cyber sale on games, and I got the newest Deus Ex because it was $4, but I haven't played it yet. But I also picked up Universe Sandbox, which is... so much fun, and I'm gonna sound like a huge nerd, so everybody's just gonna have to deal with that. But it's the universe, right? And it's all the planets, and they all have their moons and everything, and everything's orbiting in real time, and you can do you have tools to control different things that would like theoretically happen in space, like dust bits and light. And you can make things, well, no, not aliens, but you can like change the gravity of certain things by a little bit, and you'll see how it'll throw like their moons out of orbit, and then moons will crash into other planets because they got thrown off. And you can like pick Saturn and go, what if Saturn didn't have any gravity, and like, you know, change its orbit entirely, and it'll like careen into something else, and all the moons go scattering. And you can choose to highlight their trails as they, you know, bang around, and so you can see like the pathways they actually take, amongst other options. So it's basically, I mean, it's what it sounds like. It's a play around sandbox of the universe where you can cause destruction if you want to and then reset it. But it's a lot of fun. And it comes with, this was a nice feature, so it's not just so open-ended that you get bored. It comes with like little puzzles, like fun things to do, where you can, it gives you sort of prompts. It's like being in physics class again, kind of, in a good way. You said, Robert, you sound thrilled by my explanation, but
no, I'm just waiting for the Uranus joke.
There you go. I just made it.
So do they have like our solar system? Like, can you play around with our, like, do they start you with anything?
Yeah. You start out with, I think it's not it's obviously not the entire universe, but you start out with 300 stars, including our universe, I think. So it's our universe
solar
and the 300. Sorry. That's what I meant. It's our solar system plus the 300 stars and their respective solar systems / galaxies that we know about that they could put on there, which I actually asked them, because when you close it the first time, they have a thing that pops up that says, do you have any questions for us? And you can send them an email. So I sent them a question like, are you going to add, like, they just found that second Earth planet that's 42 light years away. So I said, are you going to have, you know, in effect DLC where you add planets as they're found? Which they haven't gotten back to me yet on that, but it's super cool. I mean, if you like space and you're a nerd and you like inertia physics, you love it. It's only like $2 on Steam, so it's definitely worth picking up if you have any interest in space.
Have you crashed a planet into the sun yet?
No, because I was only on it for a little while, but I did I did crash Neptune into like 7 of Saturn's moons, and then the rest of them got all foobar, and then Saturn got all. And you can change the coloring. You can make it true coloring, quote unquote, or you can make it coloring that is representative of how much gravity pull is affecting each thing. It's got some cool features.
Now, can you have a chain reaction where you cause that crash and then, say, Neptune gets out of control and then that hits another planet? Is that possible?
Totally.
Oh, okay.
This sounds like the next evolution of Grand Theft Auto to me.
Actually, I have a question about, so they label the planets and stuff. So do they label our current solar system? Because I understand that what we learned in school back in, like, you know, the 80s or whatever, is that's not the case anymore. Like, there are now demi-planets, and Pluto's not a planet now, and there are, like, semi-planetoids and things like that. Do they have – they must have the current model of the – not the 1980s model of the solar system, I suppose, huh?
Well, Earth is no longer the center of the universe, if that's what you're asking.
But but the sun rotates around the Earth.
That is still true.
No, but New Orleans is the center of
for real though. Isn't there like Ceres now? Isn't there? Don't we have another planet like somewhere out there that was never in there before? Now that they found, am I wrong about this?
Was that like the hidden planet in one of the Godzilla movies where there's like an alien race that has King Ghidorah ruling over it, and they steal Godzilla and use him to attack the world or something?
Yes,
we just jumped down that rabbit hole.
Well, so let me ask you,
not here anymore. Well, please answer all these questions.
Starting from the center of our solar system, can you name all of the planets all the way out?
Yes, it's Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, asteroid belt.
I'm thinking Sailor Moon right now.
shit, my very educated mother, Jupiter.
Saturn.
Saturn. No, it's my very educated mother just baked.
Oh, mnemonic for the win.
Gosh. So Sage now, just turned into a an old farmhand.
Sage left. I don't know what happened to her.
I know.
She got called away for an emergency law case.
Yes. Or Pluto crashed into Mercury.
Can we add her back into the call? Here.
Let's try.
Oh, see, that should just drag and drop.
Dragons? Who?
Dragons have been dropped.
There had better be an iOS game called Drag and Drop.
I feel like there was a PS1 game called Drag and Drops.
Oh, well, that's lame.
Come drops.
There was
a shit ton of questions about the universe.
I got thrown into space. I'm sorry. Ask them again.
Did you destroy your own universe that you exist in? Did you throw the Earth into the sun? Or Mars into the Earth? Or something?
Yes.
Please don't like destroy the entire Earth, please. Oh, I live on it.
Come on, man.
Sailor Moon lives on it.
Cool. Sailor Moon doesn't exist.
Yes, she does. She exists in all of our hearts.
See, that would be a good DLC for Blue.
Sailor Moon.
It would be great if every time you tried to intentionally harm Earth, some like random superhero type thing like Voltron would come and try and stop you.
But, that would be good DLC.
That would be good DLC. Jeremy, I heard the end of your question. To answer that, I think they skirt that issue completely by just calling everything a star, which is technically correct. I mean, there's planets and stars and meow meow, but they go like, here's a solar system and here's some planets you know of and here's a bunch of stars. Like, they call everything by its name. They don't say what it is necessarily.
Oh.
Okay.
I mean, you can get to that in the, like, you can pull up a window that has all of the, this part's nerdy cool too. You can pull up a window that has all the information about that body. So if it's Saturn or if it's one of the moons, like Prometheus, if you click on it, it'll say Prometheus and its mass is this much and it moves at a speed of this much and blah, blah, blah. But I think that they don't get into the politics of what exactly is this very much.
I'm waiting for the sequel where you get to pit fight dinosaurs.
On the Earth. I think that was Spore. Yes, I think that happened already.
Spore was a bore, though.
You didn't like Spore?
No. Aww. Spore didn't move fast enough for me. And then when it did, it just wasn't very fun.
What about Primal Rage?
Much better. Much better, Blue. That's more up my alley.
Well, there you go.
You play anything else?
Just to confirm really quickly, in our asteroid belt region, we have a semi-planetoid, a protoplanet, which is Ceres, which... was classified a dwarf planet in 2006.
Thanks.
Okay.
It really bothers me because, like, dinosaurs are different now than they used to be. Did you know there's no Brontosaurus now?
What?
Brontosaurus never existed. It was always a Patasaurus, and Brontosaurus was a misclassification of a Patasaurus.
Same with Triceratops, right?
Like, all kinds of stuff. No, yeah. Triceratops still exists, but now there's a whole Triceratopsidae family or something, because I was looking at, like, the Triceratops, like, alien version or something. They have, like, all kinds of diabolic or whatever. They've just got all kinds of different ones.
So what's the explanation? They just put the bones back together?
I don't know, but it really bothers me, because I thought I knew a thing or two, but, and then they just changed it all.
But Land Before Time is one of my childhood movies, and now, like Littlefoot shouldn't even exist. So what the fuck?
And what did Fred Flintstone use for work?
Oh God, I'm having
at the quarry.
Yeah, it was still in a Patasaurus. It's not like a Patasaurus didn't exist. It's just that they had two things that they thought were different. But
the Bronto Burger Shack. That's all.
Like, those ribs were probably like faux ribs that they put on his car that tips it over.
It's like McRib. It's not real at all.
It's just processed meat.
Hey, McRibs are so real.
They are so nice.
Really disgusting.
Yeah,
they're made out of real big cows.
Yeah, real like hoof parts and the Achilles tendon and everything that wouldn't go in anything else.
You're
at Thanksgiving,
welcome.
I'm
using all parts of the animal.
That's true. Although, you know what I found out today? That a cow produces 120 pounds of waste, and that means poop, a day. And so if you have a cattle farm that's got, like you know, several thousands of cows, each of those farms is producing, like, literally something point billion, close to a billion pounds of poo a day. It's disgusting.
Yeah, no, not methane gas.
You know what one of the best arguments for that is? Is that, you know, the one edible mammal that does not produce any methane?
Humans? What's
that? Kangaroos.
Ah. Kangaroos are tasty. I've had kangaroo. They're pretty good.
Really?
Yeah.
But they don't...
The science podcast is fascinating, but can we talk about games?
Yes, we can.
Okay.
I played a little more Bunny Must Die, but I'll talk about that more when I beat it. I still haven't beat it because I haven't had time. And because it's hard, Robert. It's really, really hard.
Talk to Adam about that.
It's a hard game. I'm not a poor gamer. This is a hard game.
Sorry.
Did I play anything else? Not really. Not worth mentioning. Mm. I played Tetris Online. That was nice.
Tetris Online.
Yeah.
It's a new one.
I was desperate. It was good. It felt nice.
I think I've played that one before, once or twice.
If you play enough Tetris, you can actually hallucinate the blocks and dream of them.
Are you kidding? If you play enough anything, you could. I used to play Diablo for like 6 hours, and then I'd go to bed and I'd close my eyes and I would just see demons like crawling out of everywhere. Probably explains why I am the way I am, actually.
Yeah.
Shut up.
So, I guess I'll take over here.
Yeah, but this became the sad cast. Where is it?
I know. So I realized this week that one of my passions was this genre that I don't think, correct me if I'm wrong, has been given a proper classification. So far, I call it the sandbox shooter as opposed to the hallway linear shooter. And in my little genre classification system, Saboteur is in it. Just Cause 2 is in it. Crackdown definitely is in it. GTA probably should be in it, but the shooting isn't visceral enough.
But it has to be a shooter.
It has to be a shooter. So like Borderlands 2 isn't in it. Not because it's not a good game, but the loot element really kind of changes the dynamic, turns it into a little bit of a dungeon crawl. So anyway, yesterday I got in Far Cry 3, which I've heard nothing but good things about. We saw at E3, and the game definitely looked good there at the Ubisoft show. The developer allowed, if you guys remember, that AI tiger to get loose and to maul enemies, and it opened with boobies, Sean.
Boobies.
Tatas, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. But I don't know. I had the sneaking suspicion that the AI tiger was the one good idea, and I didn't know if the rest of the gameplay would kind of match the concept. Usually at, you know, E3 at those trade shows, they show like the one set piece that's really cool, and everything else, you know, isn't quite as cool. So without breaking embargo, I'll tell you that the story, it's not Shakespeare, but it's 99% better than most shooters out there. The opening of the game shows a group of these Americans having a good time on this lush island before things go all Eli Roth, and the group is kidnapped there. But and the characters, both the protagonists, the some of the NPCs, and the lead villain, they're all well done. The dialogue is pretty crisp. The voice acting is solid. And one thing I like is the in-game camera. It follows them around. It's almost cinematic because it shifts between characters during conversation. You know, it's fairly noticeable. Rather Bethesda-ish, you break away from this imminent death and you skulk around as the game teaches you about its nuances. And there's a lot to learn. There's a codex, which continually kind of pops up in the right side of the screen. And it's filled with explanations of people, of things, weapons, you name it. All, you know, button press or two away. And then the game lets you off the leash, and then the Skyrim kind of feel returns as you're sent out to collect plants and to kill animals for leather. Now, you'd think, that, oh God, you know, collecting shit, that's not very cool. But what is smart about these tutorial missions is that they're not just, you know, stupid, empty errands. Plants can be made into the syringes that refill your life, and animal skins are converted into packs, which expand, you know, allow you to carry more stuff. And at the beginning of the game, you can barely carry, you know, a few cigars and poker chips. And stuff there is. Like Borderlands, there's boxes all over the place. They're filled with, you know, currency, ammo, random junk to sell. There's just a lot of stuff all over the place. One of the first missions is to disable a radio tower that one of the island factions has set up. And climbing that thing is pretty intense. Not only the sound, the creaking, you don't know kind of what's going to happen. But it really shows the power of the game's engine. You have a really good draw distance. As soon as I got up there, I ziplined down, and then that urge hit me, and I wanted to, you know, kind of fuck around. I found a car laying around. I hopped in it, you know, put pedal to the metal. And, or in this case, I guess, forefinger to plastic. And the driving itself is kind of like Far Cry 2. And if you guys played Dead Island, that first person perspective, it feels a little bit clunky. You know, maybe I'm used to racers, but I'm not really into it. But it's a quick and a safe way to get around the island. Maybe not always safe. One of the things I was doing, I was racing down a road, and then a deer just darted in front of the car. And, you know, killed itself as it bounced off my hood. You know, really surprised me. And so I got out of the car, skinned it, and then just started hunting and running over animals for, you know, about half an hour just for shits, giggles, and to kind of test the boundaries of the game. Before long, I got back on track, and then this posse wanted to overthrow an enemy compound. Now, most games feel really binary. You can either be a little bit stealthy or you pick them off one by one. Go in guns blazing. I usually get the feeling one is preferred, or at the very least, one is a lot more fun than the other. And to me, it just makes sense to kind of thin the numbers out, and then once the alarm is raised, go in full force, which is exactly what I did in Far Cry. I set up C4, knifed some guys from behind, and then when the bodies were noticed, and I went in and killed some more. And it's got good AI. It's got a really kind of cool couple of tech trees to advance the protagonist's ability. And, you know, killing and blowing up shit is just really gratifying. So far, really in love with Far Cry 2. Noticed a few just minor nitpicky flaws, but that said, it's probably up there with XCOM for my game of the year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, really, really cool. You know,
that's
great
impressive.
Graphics. Yeah, you guys should check it out, especially on PC, where I think they have a map editor as well.
Did you say it's on special now?
It's what?
Did you say whether or not it's on special? I know they had a bunch of games that games that are.
No, I didn't check that because it's just coming out this week. I doubt it'll be on special, but give it a few weeks.
Word. So,
any questions, Jeremy?
And it might be free on PlayStation Plus at some point, like Far Cry 2 was.
Okay. Yeah, if you want to wait.
I do kind of have a question because I know that at least just kind of looking out, you know, from the outside looking in, I've seen a lot of people's concerns about this game be kind of, there's kind of a social awareness component to this, like maybe some things are maybe in bad taste or, you know, maybe some things about the villains or characters might be kind of questionable. Did you feel that any of that was an issue?
City or what? What's the issue?
Well, I don't know. Like
you're shooting at dark people. It's the same issue people had with Far Cry 2.
I did feel a little bit of that during the last Call of Duty, Black Ops 2. But in this one, I didn't get it because some of your allies are.
Then there's like the titties and stuff, and you know that was kind of questionable. And
you don't like titties? What's wrong
with
titties?
I'm not saying titties are bad. I'm just saying there was questionable use of titties.
Yeah.
And
no use is questionable use of titties.
And then the main bad guy, I guess, is sort of like oh, he's supposed to be like extra bad because he rapes men or something like that. And it's like, you know, I guess that's kind of what I have noticed about this game. Like, I figured like, yeah, it's probably more Far Cry 2. People like Far Cry 2. There's no malaria, so everybody's probably happy about that. But So there is no malaria, right? So you're not going to be swimming across the, you know, the river and then have a bout of malaria and sink to the bottom. Nothing like that, I guess.
No, I haven't seen that so far.
Okay, no malaria.
I don't know. The bad guy was, you know, kind of over the top, but like I said, it was filled a little Eli Roth. Nothing outside of, you know, most games. Or, I found Call of Duty, Black Ops 2, to be a little bit over the top.
I think Far Cry needed an over-the-top villain, though, because the problem with Far Cry 2 was that, you know, an hour into the game, you kind of forget what your motivation is, and you're just kind of wandering around. And then if you ever came across the story, you were like, oh, yeah, that jackal asshole. He's
right.
Another dude. He's a white dude, though, which makes him different than the hordes of other... I think the social aspect was much more obvious in Far Cry 2, because it's you and your band of white dudes going after the only other white dude in Africa and then mowing down hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of
brown people dudes on your way to do it.
I thought that was much... It seems like they at least addressed that in Far Cry 3.
But I like, Sean, I like your point that they kind of needed a more over-the-top villain, because I think if you're going to have a game that's not as much on rails, you either need a bunch of like side quests that are connected to the main quest to keep you on track, or you need a villain that's so dramatic that it reminds
so
you
rapey
what you're still doing. Yeah, well, it doesn't have to be rapey, but it has to be dramatic. if rape equals drama to you, then yes.
Yeah, let's move away from that subject. So next up is a game that I know a few of our readers and listeners, they asked me to review. I never got it in. In fact, I really don't know what's going on with Sony PR. Ended up paying $15 for Little Big Planet Karting. Now, I expect most people to say, isn't the game just Mod Nation Racers with Sackboy? And Jeremy, we had kind of a midweek discussion. Mm-hmm. And to that answer, I'd say at first, but once you kind of poke your head around, you'll see a number of kind of cool differences. Like all
Sackboy.
The Little Big... What's that? Sackboy?
Like Sackboy.
Yes. Like all the Little Big Planet entries, Stephen Fry, he's the narrator. And so in that, it earns a star in my book, you know, right there. He's funny without trying too hard, and hearing his anecdotes, it you know, always puts a smile on my face. And there's probably someone out there who doesn't like his commentary, but I don't think I've met that Grinch yet. Sean, are you that Grinch?
Which Grinch? The one that does
the one that doesn't like Stephen Fry, Little Big Planet narrator.
No, I think
look
he's all right.
At you, you're such a handsome little sack person. Now we can jump up on top of this circly thing here. Look,
you know what? You know what?
Not quite.
I would gladly shoot Stephen Fry in the face if Justin, Jeremy could, or Justin McElroy, either one of them, if they would narrate all my games for me.
Okay.
I'll narrate your rapey games for you. How about that?
Oh, look at this. He's raping a man.
Oh, no.
And the tentacle goes in the asshole.
Speaking of Grinches, back on track. I didn't like the first few races in karting. Instead of an emphasis on driving, it's really about weapons management. It does have Mod Nation's choice between offensive abilities and a defensive shield. But as I stuck with it, the game started showing me more of its goodies. There's a first-person... that sounded dirty. There's first-person F1 races where you have to pit to charge your electric car. There's rally races, which I always love. I'm always a sucker for those, where it's just you against the clock. There's death matches, which feel like the old... Mario Kart balloon popping, you know, competitions where you pick up weapons and you try and nail the competitors. And there's overhead RC races that feel like the old Super Off-Road. And of course, there's a ton of collectibles on each track that feed into the grade and share components. And jumping into the creator, it allows more flexibility than Mod Nation, but there's also a lot more work. I was able to craft a fairly decent track. You know, it had some water and spray painted mountains, but unlike Mod Nation, where it was pretty instinctive, I could figure out how to place trees. That one I couldn't quite figure out without jumping into a mountain of tutorials there. Still, I saw things like event triggers, forks in the road, a lot of deeper stuff. And I'm sure that there's enough game to justify the bargain price, if not, you know, like a $30 purchase. So go help Sony out there, because from what I've heard, God, they need it right now.
Yeah.
Poor guys.
As bad or worse than THQ?
Not as bad. Not as bad. From what I heard, Sony, they're trying to... I have a friend who's a financial analyst. They're trying to round up about $2 billion in bonds, and then their bond rating got dropped to junk. So that's going to be real hard for them. And at this time of year, I guess scrounging up cash is not a usual practice. So that's Sony. Good luck, you guys. I love you. Anyway, been playing a little Halo 4, which I went from someone who kind of loved the first two games, and then I played bits and pieces of the sequels. So this one really surprised me. The game's single player. It's got these nice collection of set pieces that are really enjoyable because they feel nice and open, you know, going back to my sandbox shooter thing. Not really a sandbox, but they give players kind of a wide environment to use kind of weapons of their choice against an AI that's, you know, a step or two above the norm. I've been playing a lot of Spartan Ops, which is this series of standalone challenges that's offered to players. When I first heard about it, it's free weekly content. I assumed it was going to stink because if it was any good, I figured 343 and Microsoft would charge for it. And it's not quite something, you know, you pay more than a dollar or two per episode for. But as an addition, I think it's really cool. The one downside is even if you're playing single player, you have to have an Xbox Live Gold account. Which,
what?
Yes.
Again with this crap?
Yeah. I mean, it's a perk. So, you know, it's something outside of the main campaign. But yeah, you got to have gold.
Oh, that sucks. Fuck that.
Uncool. So wait, I have a question for you, Robert.
Yes.
How do you feel about because I'm a big Halo player and I have stayed away from 4 because I had heard all of my Gramer friends were like, it's great. And all of my friends that are a little more into the plotline of Halo had said, like, it's nothing about Halo and therefore you might not like it. So what is your take on that?
What I've heard is the exact opposite of that, is that it's so into the Halo fiction that if you haven't read the books, you're not going to understand what's going on.
Hmm.
Really? Yeah. Okay. I have not read the books. So I don't think I ever would do that.
Maybe you don't get it to the point of you don't realize you're missing the...
Maybe. I really love the opening cinematic. And I love the music, which is really cool. The one thing that kind of drives me nuts is... You know, 343 is a great engine, but it still feels like Halo, the original Halo, in many ways because it has these mechanics. Like when you're playing the game, it's kind of loading and it gives you a number. And then it kind of it tells you when it's spooling in more data, it will say like loading, and so it breaks immersion to tell you that still. And it's like, come on, really? I mean, the game looks great in many ways, but you know, I'm really surprised that it still puts loading on the screen. And before you restart your campaign, it does that whole, you know, kind of long, slow, minute, 90-second load type of thing there, which you know, was from the original Halo, if you remember playing that.
You know what? I don't think they put a minute and 30-second load to make it more like the original Halo, I think.
No.
They need to load all that data.
Saying what they probably have is still it's still based on some of the same, you know, programming elements, components there.
Is it though? Because it's not the same people at all.
They lovingly handed Halo over in all
they
aspects.
Did not lovingly hand it over. They begrudgingly handed it over.
Shooters don't feel like that. Where you jump into your campaign and it's kind of a slow load, and you get this, you know, meter that counts up to 100, and then they kind of sputter in like that. It just feels a lot like, you know, the original Halo in that mechanic. And it's not bothersome. It's not really cumbersome. Once you get past that load, it's not noticeable, but I'm just kind of surprised that they haven't at least erased that, you know, loading message. So one last thing I'll talk about, because we're all in a hurry tonight, is Under Defeat HD, which is a vertical shmup that came out this week courtesy of Rising Star Software. They are brought out Akai Katana this past summer. And this was originally developed in Japan by GBREV way back when, during the Dreamcast era. And this is a $30 package. Originally they said they were going to price it at $40, which was kind of which is kind of cool that they dropped it by $10. PS3 only. You can buy it online for $30, or if you get the Blu-ray release at the same price, you get the soundtrack and a digital art booklet on a second disc. They don't put it on Blu-ray because then you wouldn't be able to read it in most computer setups. Maybe Sage, with your water-cooled one, you could there. So the game's hook there is that you're a helicopter, and you put out this constant stream of chain gun fire when you hold down the X button. And when you let go, you can do one of two things. You can reorient your ship in one of three directions. You can point left, right, or dead center. And then you also charge a meter, and then when you let go, that creates an option, which provides an additional field of fire there. The graphics are good, really good, but there is occasional slowdown, and which probably won't bother shmup fans too much, because it does make the game easier. Or in the case of bombs, it delivers the biggest napalm explosion that my PS3 has ever seen. It makes Apocalypse Now look like a 4th of July fountain. huge. So there's plenty of modes and adjustable difficulty, so that probably makes it one of the better PS3 shmups out there. I just wish maybe the slowdown wasn't there. But fun, cool, simple, not too complex. So that's Under Defeat HD.
Word.
You know, people are still putting out Dreamcast games.
Yeah. Pure Solar, which I own for Genesis, which is the last Genesis game developed, they just finished their Kickstarter to port it to Dreamcast.
Didn't they stop making the discs for that, though? The GDs or whatever they are?
You can also use, I think it's CDRs or CDRWs. It'll still read those. Because that was the big problem with the Dreamcast. If you had a launch day Dreamcast, all you had to do was put your GD-ROM in a burner, put a CDR on the other side, and then copy it directly, and then it would read it. I still have a burned copy of Soul Calibur somewhere. Works just fine.
I hope you have the real copy to go along with it.
I do have the copy to go with it.
Speaking of real, what have you been playing that's real good, Sean?
I don't want to talk about Okami too much, but I listened to last podcast this morning, and I know Jeremy promised everybody I would tell the story of why I
did. I'm very interested in this. I'm very interested.
So I get an email from Rob saying, hey, you know, Okami HD is out. We got a review code. Do you want to do a dual review of this? And I said, yeah, I think I got time. So I get home and I download it, and I, you know, start it up, and my girlfriend and I are really excited because we're both big fans of the Wii version. And so we had this setup where, you know, we'd come home, we'd eat dinner, and we'd watch TV for a while, and then she would study, and then I would play the game. You know, that's our normal setup. This isn't special.
How do you study during that?
Well, this is where we're going with this.
Oh, did I wreck it? I'm sorry.
Yeah, so I'm playing the game, and, you know, we're fat, dumb, and happy playing this game, studying, whatever, and, you know, like, by the time it's time to go to bed, we're, like, yelling and screaming and you know, like we're upset with each other and we're in bad mood. And next day, same thing. And the next day, same thing. And finally, you know, she's studying one night and she's like, Sean, I just got such a headache. Can you play it with the sound off? And I'm like, oh, and I snapped at her and I fucking turned the sound off. And I'm like, I can't review this game without the sound. And we turned it off. And then that night we didn't get into a fight. And I'm like, basically what's happening is that sound they make when they talk,
yeah,
it gives us such a migraine. And it's one of those things that when we played the Wii version, she played it when she was in school and she had this itty bitty CRT, and I played it up here, but I used to have this, you know, crappy old mono television, and like the sound was so poor on it that it just didn't get to us. But now that we have like a sound system, it's like psychological warfare to play that game for us.
Yeah.
So it is
pretty bad.
It is the best version of that game out there, but it's almost to its detriment for us. I can't even imagine if we had surround sound or something set up. I probably would have burnt the apartment down.
So good. The sound is so good.
They did really improve the sound in that game, except the fact that now the fidelity of that awful, awful noise, and there's a lot of talking in that game.
Yeah, there is. Can you go into the options and adjust the wah-wah?
No, you cannot.
They should have put that in.
They should have. They should have had a wah-wah off.
Mute.
I would love that game without a wah. I realize it's also why I never finished. It's also why I never finished Okami Den, is that I just got exhausted playing it, and that's just probably why. But because that one I had to have headphones in. But I played that until I couldn't. But then I also played The Walking Dead.
Wait. So, what's going on now? Okami is banned from the Kirkland residence?
Oh, yeah. I took it off the hard drive.
I'm
never going to open it.
Damn.
Wow. Okay.
Well, I still own it for the Wii, and if I'm going to play it, I'm going to play that version of it because it won't kill me. But it does the same thing. But the sound isn't as good. Like, it is a difference in the HD sound. It really is.
I hear you're saying that's kind of like
in my heart.
I'm sorry. I also think the motion controls are better on the Wii version.
No, that's not true.
Two against one, Jeremy.
Listen. There's one main reason why. There's one specific reason.
The fidelity is better on the Move version, and that makes it harder to control.
Yep. Okay, then there's two reasons because that makes it good. But the other reason is because in the Wii version, to attack, you have to swing that thing around just to do an attack.
You can do that in the PS3 version.
Can you? No, but I'm saying that's bad.
So if you hold, I like that. You hold the trigger and you sling it, and it slings a frisbee thing off of you. I like that.
I didn't actually know it would do that.
I'm pretty
sure.
That's
terrible anyway, because you don't want to be waggling that thing around for just your basic attack. So what they did is they remapped it in the Move version so that if you waggle it, Amaterasu will do that little like jumpy twirly thing. So you just use it for the dodges.
If you just waggle it, they do the jump, but if you hold the trigger and waggle it, you'll attack.
I didn't know that.
I
think the trigger actually gets you into the overload mode, drawing mode.
I don't know. That was a week and a half ago. I've played other games since then. Like The Walking Dead, which I'm done with now.
Oh, that's a good one.
That's going to be my game of the year, no contest. That's my game of the decade, really, because there's just nothing that's come close to having that much of an effect on me. I cried twice during the last episode.
Of the podcast? Really?
No, I cried way more than the podcast. But mostly because I was trapped in an airport. But no, it was a really powerful experience, and it's interesting now that I'm done with it and I'm listening to other people that are spoiling it and stuff and hearing the different experiences and how they basically what they say is that they're not making a game with multiple paths, they're tailoring the same narrative to your decisions, and hearing how they did that, you know, when you kind of take it apart is really interesting, but also hearing how different people interpreted even just the main line of the story. Like for me, that story is about, you know, Lee and Kenny and their friendship and how that pushes them along. And it's weird to me hearing how people just absolutely hate Kenny. And I'm like, I don't think I could enjoy that game at all if I hated Kenny.
I feel that way when people talk about the TV show, because they're like, oh, I hate Laurie. Oh, I hate T-Dog. Nobody hates T-Dog. You know, I hate so-and-so. And I'm like, well, they're not, they're just, you know, it's just a dude. Like, you really have to hate him that much? Oh, whatever Andrea's on, I hate that show. Well, just, she's just being herself. She's just a character. You don't have to, I don't like Kratos because he's such an asshole. I can't play God of War.
Well,
Twitter that spoiled the ending?
Oh, no.
Yes.
Well, I mean, you kind of know how it's going to end, but still, oh, no.
Yeah. I'm only 3 episodes in, so yeah, fuck those guys.
You should still finish it. It's
oh yeah, I will, as soon as I have some time, but probably before the new year. I plan to.
That's where the people don't know anything at all, because it's so easy not to. Like, you put a little thingy over it and don't put it on fucking Twitter.
Yeah, but when I finished that game, I wanted to talk to somebody about it so bad, Yeah, but it was interesting, though, because I was talking about the people not liking Kenny thing, I was talking to somebody about that, and we kind of got on this topic of, you know, people don't like Kenny because he's supposed to be the redneck character, and, you know, people that never lived in the Southeast just naturally have this abject hatred towards people in the Southeast, and it kind of went in this weird direction where we're like, well, the game takes place in Georgia and, you know, blah, 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 this, that, and the other. And we kind of thought about it. And Lee is the only black character in that game. And that really struck me as weird because I've lived in Georgia and it's something like a 65% African American population down there. Mm-hmm. They don't address that.
I find that kind of weird in the TV show, too. Like, there's one black character. He doesn't say anything and then they kill him off and then they have another black character, like one other black character.
Yeah, it's like even the zombies, there's like one black zombie character model. And we got to talk about how, you know, the game is developed in San Francisco, and what they did do is they did a very, what we called West Coast racism. It's they made sure that every type of person was represented in that game, but they didn't really consider that, hey, where this takes place, this group of people doesn't make a whole hell of a lot of sense.
Right. Instead, it looks like a Toys R Us ad.
Yeah, it's like, well, we want to make sure that everybody can play this game, but we don't want them to actually feel like they're in Georgia, because, I mean, who wants that, you know?
Right.
I don't know. It kind of just struck me as weird. And I went back and looked at it, and I was like, well, yeah, this whole thing, they could have just said this was San Francisco, because that's what they wanted.
Well, so, Sean, I have a question for you about this. So, you said that this is your game of the year, game of the decade, and it basically amounts to essentially a choose-your-own-adventure book, right? I mean, like, and I know you said that they have said, and I guess I am not of the same mind that it was billed this way, because I think all throughout, I think there has been kind of an expectation, at least this was my trajectory with the game, was that I expected that my choices would make, you know, a fairly significant difference. And even some of the main, you know, choices that you make about who lives or who dies, they don't tend to make that big a difference in the long run. And I don't want to say anything more specific than that. They don't make that much of a difference even in the medium term, I guess. And even toward the end of the game, some of the things, you know, when I figured, like, okay, this is going to be the last episode, they're going to, like, really branch out, the decision that you make is going to totally change the ending, you know, and ultimately, as you said, it ended up being more about, you know, maybe taking a couple of twists or turns to get to essentially the same general outcome. And maybe you have a different spin on that. But I guess I just find that, you know, I mean, that's the strength of this game, right? Was the decision making or the choices that you make. And in the final tally of it, I guess I never really felt like they delivered on, you know, on having a unique, you know, decision-based experience.
I wanted to say the one that the one in the last episode, or I guess it's the end of the second to last episode, that was the only one that really disappointed me, because you can end the fourth episode in two such incredibly different places. And then when I found out that how they managed to make the end still happen sort of the same way, that kind of disappointed me.
Because my choice on the end of the fourth episode, you know how they give you the percentages of, like, oh, this many people chose this. I was with the 5% of people by the end of episode four.
By the time I had finished episode four, the different possibilities were spread pretty evenly. So,
Jeremy, my playthrough of Catherine was like you.
Well, and then I'm like, and then I was kind of worried. I'm like, oh my God, I've made the wrong decision here. Like, what if I've just totally just like effed myself? What if this is bad? And then I was like, no, they won't let me have, you know, shot myself in the foot here. I'm going to have a great experience. And then in the final tally of it, it kind of turns out like, well, it was good that you were in the 5%, but it kind of doesn't matter anyway, because we're going to take a left turn here.
And
I'm not saying the game is bad. I love this game. I think it's great that they made it. I think they did a great job with it. I love the characters. I think they did a good job with that. But in terms, I guess I'm just sort of reining in, because maybe I at one point would have said, yeah, game of the year, but I'm kind of thinking again about it. And I'm going, you know, gee, really, did it do like the one thing that everybody was really hyped up about, the decision making? Because ultimately, by the end of it, when I talked to other people, I'm like, yeah, you know, I kind of had the same experience.
Yeah, but my thing is that, yes, the choose-your-own-adventure aspect of it is the thing that gets the most attention, but I think the best aspect of the game is that they create sort of a hidden character out of the UI, and I think when you get to the end of the game, the UI is actually the character, to put it in air quotes, that kind of got the most mm-hmm. emotion out of me, that they spent the last 6 months kind of teaching me these little gameplay elements, and then the way they use that to kind of dig out real actual gut-wrenching emotion in that last episode through gameplay mechanics, not through storytelling. That was really powerful, and that's something that, I mean, the closest thing I can think of is the, you know, the microwave tunnel in Metal Gear Solid 4, but I mean, when you think about, I will just say, the scene with the stranger and the way mm-hmm. they use the, you know, the not just the button mashing mechanic, but the way they kind of use that UI trigger to let you know that, I mean, I can't really say it without spoiling.
Yeah, they talked about the same thing in Heavy Rain, right, where something was difficult in the UI, or it even goes back all the way to Resident Evil, where, and this is a highly divisive issue too, where people say, well, part of the game mechanic is the fact that you kind of have this jank sort mm-hmm. of interface, like you tank controls. Mm-hmm. But yeah, exactly. But and you know, it sort of it strips away your, you know, awesome gamer ability. Or in Heavy Rain, where they would make something difficult, and you know, maybe if somebody was depressed, and you know, your mini game was like hard, it was hard to get out of bed, you know, or whatever. And on one hand, it's like, haha, that's cheesy. But on the other hand, that is a way that the developer can make something that might otherwise be easy, and you hit it every time, into mm-hmm. something that you really are facing the possibility of failing something.
Jeremy, I was going to ask you, was your experience diminished because you had heard that, you know, your experience was so similar to others? So did you have a great gameplay and then you kind of walked away and said, oh, it's kind of similar, that's not as cool?
No, okay. And I'm glad that you asked that, because in the comparison, I think some of the smaller things sort of get to stand out, but mm-hmm. usually what I noticed was like, okay, I've made this decision, and then you can kind of, like, it didn't really matter what happened anyway. And, you know, maybe there's just a little bit of a, you know, fourth wall sort of situation here where, you know, where you're watching a movie and you're like, oh, a zombie's going to come out of that closet mm-hmm. or something.
Yep.
You know, and there was kind of that kind of thing where it was like, ah, I bet they killed off so-and-so because they were going to do it anyway and it didn't really matter. Mm-hmm. And getting toward the end, there were a couple of moments like that. And like I said, my 5%, I'm like, oh,
okay.
You know, my 5%. And then suddenly it's like, well, it didn't really matter anyway because of,
you could kind of see the trajectory, like the programming of the story element there.
A little bit, but overall, and they really pulled it off. And I agree with Sean in that, you know, the arc of this thing, I think, has been brilliant and has been really well executed. But I was just thinking, in terms of making something a game of the year or a game of the decade, for sure, I kind of look at it in terms of what was the mission statement of this game? Like, what was the thing? And it was... it was the decisions, right? And you know, the characters I absolutely also play a part of it. You know, the whole idea of zombie movies and zombie stories are about the people, and they had great characters. I love the characters, but just in the, you know, like I said, in the balance of it, when I went back and looked at it and thought, oh, you know, this decision, it's going to change mm-hmm. the way it works, and then I kind of could tell, like, well, it didn't really change anything, and then it happened a few other times.
I guess the big issue is your game of the year in the moment or at the end?
I still say at the end was very powerful, and okay. I don't think I felt that way. It doesn't matter that my end was the same as somebody else's end.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say that as far as the choices affecting the game go, there's one choice that I made specifically because I didn't think it was going to make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And in the long run, if you say, like, from it did not change the end of the series, but it changed the end of that episode enough that I felt really bad about the fact that I made that choice, because it was one of those things that, yes, they do eventually make it to a status quo, but it wasn't until the middle of the next episode. And so when I was a month away from that and I didn't know, I freaked out. I was like, shit, I made a bad choice there because I thought it didn't matter, and it did. And I don't know, it screwed with me, like, in a really bad way.
So do you have a favorite episode overall, or a least favorite episode? Maybe both. What's your over-under on that?
I still think it's hard, because the last episode, I think I like the last episode so much just because it was the building on everything. But that aside, I think the third episode is still the best.
I do like the third episode also. I think for me, the second episode, I think, is probably the weakest. But
yeah.
There are some of the things are a little hokey. And you know, when you're in a post-apocalyptic zombie scenario, I think there's a tendency that, like, oh, this character could be totally normal, but actually they have these weird zombie daddy issues, you know, and they end up with people who have, like, some weird caricatures, like, really? Really? And there are some things.
That's a thing? I have zombie daddy issues?
Zombie daddy issues.
The second episode I thought was the weakest, just because they added that character specifically to die right in the... You know, like they didn't introduce this character. It's just
he came
sometime
out of nowhere,
between episode
too.
One and two, you picked up this other guy. And up.
Yeah.
Is that the undeadable complex?
Ha ha. Ha ha. That's a zombie daddy issue. But... Yeah, so there is a little bit of that, kind of some hokey, and you know that element kind of carries through to the end of the five episode arc. But overall, really good. I just kind of wanted to have that discussion because I know a lot of people, especially at this time of year, are getting into the game of the year, and it's rightly getting a lot of attention. I just have kind of like been thinking back on it and thinking about, you know, is it really what it purported to be, and did they really execute on that? And in some ways, yes.
You also have to remember that this was a really shitty year for games.
What?
I've heard people say that. I don't know if I believe it or not, but you're not the only person to say that.
Kid Icarus Uprising.
I think it was a less robust year for games. I don't know that I think it was shit.
Well, I think there have been a lot of rehashed sort of no new concept ideas, and I think that might be one of the reasons why it struck me so much, is that most of the other games I've played this year, and I will say I have not played XCOM yet, but most of the other games I've played this year have been so iterative on the same ideas we've had all generation, just because this generation is now 6 years old and it's long in the tooth and people are holding off any sort of innovation for, you know, God willing, next year.
But thematically, it's not exactly original. I mean...
Well, it kind of is. It does everything that I keep saying that I don't want, you know, that I want from zombie games. You know, it's not this whole, hey, they're zombies, it's okay, they don't feel anything, so just mow them down sort of mentality. It's like, yo, them zombies, they was people you knew.
Right. Well, no, I more meant, I mean, I get that part and I agree with you there. Maybe it's just that they rehashed an idea, but they did it better than some of the other things that have done that, because it came from a comic book, which then came to TV and then came to...
No, I realize that it isn't an adaptation, but I'm just saying that the game as a whole package was so unique. There is nothing else like that.
Right. That's true.
And it's unfortunate that... No, that's a mean thing to say. I'm not going to say that.
I just think maybe this year didn't offer... innovation. We saw more sequels, but these sequels were very good in their own rights, and so maybe there was a lack of originality, but calling this year kind of a shitty year, I don't know. It seems...
I'm just saying that
it takes a disaster to be a shitty year, and this is not a disaster by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, like the Wii U.
Hey, the Vita came out this year, dude.
The Vita did come out.
Eat that.
I mean, I'm just saying, I think that there was a lot of crap that came out this year, but there's a lot of crap that comes
every year. Yeah.
And I think
nothing stands out this year for me.
Well, I think that might be a lessening of... It felt like the injury. It felt like the industry took a little bit of a breather on the bench this year, because like a lot of stuff's coming out next year. It seems like they're sort of
moving to the next gen.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. I'm saying that this year, I feel like the Game of the Year discussions were much more exciting last year than they were this year.
That's true.
Double Dragon Neon came out.
Yeah.
So, Double Dragon Neon did come out this year. That gets my second place.
So did Batman Arkham City not come out this year? Was that, that last year?
I think that was January, wasn't it? Like, end of January, early February?
But then I wasn't sure.
Hold on, I'll just look this up. I have the internet right here. We don't need to talk about it anymore.
Jeremy, you almost sounded drunk for a second. Hold on.
I'm going to talk about Batman Arkham City.
I'm looking at it right now.
It came out in 2011.
Yep, October 2011.
I love you guys.
But,
October
but don't,
2011.
Don't worry, it came out just recently for the Wii U.
Gets by on a technicality.
I'm holding for really good games that may not be AAA games. You know, things that kind of got overlooked, like Binary Domain, Sleeping Dog somewhat. You know, some really solid experiences. Not Game of the Year material, maybe, but, you know, stuff like Starhawk that was really kind of fun. And,
yeah. Starhawk was fun. Yeah, you're right. Not Game of the Year material, but... Oh. But I had more fun in the campaign in that than I was expecting.
That was a lot of fun. That was really good.
Yeah, but moving on from my game of the year, my snarky game of the year comment.
Game of the decade comment, you said. Let's not forget.
I cried, dude. For reals. Not like I forced myself to cry because Aeris died and I wanted to feel. It's like an actual emotional response.
You hurt your
I heart. Haven't seen you crying like
spoilers.
Years.
I know. the other thing I've been playing, I played Wild Arms 1, 3, and 5 this week.
Wow,
damn.
Because, well, mostly because...
How are you keeping the story straight?
Well, because they're very different stories. Okay. I was watching a Let's Play of the first one, because this dude who follows me on Twitter, he's like, hey, I'm starting this thing, and we're doing Wild Arms. Like, oh, I love Wild Arms, and I'll watch it. And then I looked at his Twitter profile and realized he lives like 2 blocks from me, which is weird. So I started playing it because I started watching that. And then I got to thinking about it. It's like, I haven't played 5 in a while. And 5 is one of my favorite games ever, which I never really talked to other people about. But apparently I'm all alone in that because people hate that game. But I started playing that and I was like, you know, I've beaten this one twice. Maybe I should go back and play 3 because I always said I would play all the way through that. And then I ended up back on 1. But it was a nice little going through all the beginning of all these Wild Arms games, because those are all good games. It's unfortunate that 4 is not good. But, yeah, I don't really have much to say about that other than those are still great. And,
I'm looking at 4 right now.
Yeah, 4 is not good. 4.
Why
it's
are they
funny
called
because,
Wild Arms?
Because, well, it's different in every game. Basically, arms are usually mystical guns of some sort.
Just
are they
never
wild?
Grows old.
Well, it's in the Wild West.
If you're playing Uno, can you change the color of the...
Yes.
No?
Actually, you can change the color in 5 because you can assign the different relics or whatever the hell they were.
Oh, that's cool.
There you go.
And Robert, what was your game Under Something or Other? I call bullshit on that title, too.
Under Defeat HD?
Under Defeat. Why the hell would you call it Under Defeat? That's BS.
I don't know. It's a Japanese game.
Well, it's funny because I had seen that for sale on, like, J-List or something.
Yep.
Like months ago because it was a Japanese release
yeah.
And then I saw somebody tweeted they had just bought it and the picture for the American the cover is so like Black Hawk Down
yep.
Intense helicopter flying through
yeah.
Fire sort of thing
it is.
And the cover of the Japanese version is so anime so when somebody tweeted it I was like oh cool a helicopter sim and then I clicked it and I was like nope it's a shooter.
And it's kind of weird because at the end of every level they usually have the moe girls you know and shmups. These are moe.
Oh,
these are moe young boys. Just putting it out there.
Huh. Already then.
Yeah.
Awkward silence here.
Yeah.
I'm not
so
even touching
on,
that.
It says here on the outline that I'm supposed to give RC helicopter impressions, but I actually didn't get that for me. So.
Boo! You should have bought one for yourself.
Well, I didn't have the money to because I
he
thought
he played with it. He just won't talk about
I
it.
I saw one at 7-Eleven for $20, blue.
But does it have a webcam built into
oh,
it?
Oh no!
Oh,
there you go.
Wow!
But I thought I was going to be buying a Vita that day, but I could not find one.
Really?
About yeah. Amazon? They
well,
had $179 with the Assassin's Creed,
everything.
Whatever the PS.
Right, but that sold out It sold out within like 45 minutes, and they did it two times that day, and it sold out both times. Right. But But I was out looking for one in all these places that were sold out. And it was bad because when I was at Fry's, they were out, and then they restocked while I was there, and then ran out before I got to the shelf that had them.
So, oh, what?
Wow, that is seriously Charlie Brown shit.
Yeah. But
go to kick the football. Kick the football. No football.
It's okay because I got Tupperware.
I got a tablet for $50.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go whack on.
We can talk about this stuff later on.
Yeah, $50 tablets. That's not going to be end well.
Yeah.
Hey, it's a good tablet. It was on sale on Amazon during Cyber Monday. Okay.
Oh, is it a Kindle Fire?
No, not that kind of tablet. A drawing tablet, like a Wacom.
Oh,
I thought it was Tablet Talk. Never mind.
No, not fuck tablet. No. This is the my brother and I want to make a comic book.
Oh, yeah.
Online. Cool. We've wanted to do it for a while, so finally I was like, fuck it, it's Cyber Monday, and I got on Amazon and they had.
Should have got a U-Draw for like $5.
Well, no, because you know this is much better.
I think you got Manga Studio X or something like that.
Wait, Blue, I might get Manga Studio. Jeremy, what did you say?
I said I've heard that if you beat the average on the THQ Humble Bundle, that they'll throw in a U-Draw for free.
I got a Google. What's Google offers? They were giving out U-Draw tablets for like $13 from Google offers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd get one for that.
That's like $3, way too much. Unless it came with all the software. I have one. Never opened it.
You really send it to somebody?
All right, shit.
Make it a Christmas giveaway for the podcast.
You draw plus all the crappy software. Just leave a comment.
You draw. Just leave it on the road.
Just draw a picture, and then you're required to post it next week.
Oh my God! Wait, the new Humble Bundle gives you Metro 2033.
Yeah.
Oh my God! I've wanted that game so bad. I'm buying.
But you can get it for $1.
I'm getting it right now.
I was gonna send
for $1. Message.
Yeah, for $1.
Were you gonna send me something? Wrong?
Yeah, I was gonna send you that bundle. I want to help THQ and Sony. No, go ahead, spend your $1.
No, I won't buy it if you're gonna send it to
no,
me.
No, you spend the $1. And in the meantime, Jeremy, you tell me what you've been playing.
Yeah, I've been hitting the Brawl style fighting games, PlayStation All Stars Battle Royale.
Rip-off.
Royale with cheese. You know what? I am glad it's a ripoff. And Blue, I'm glad that you made that snarky comment.
Wait. I played a little bit of it. It is not a ripoff at all.
It is pretty close. Okay. I mean, let's be honest here. I mean, I love it, and I liked it a lot more than I thought I would. But it is pretty darn close, and I can forgive the the nearsighted fanboy who might say it's a ripoff. But you know what?
You know.
Why not have
put
more ripoffs of great games?
Brawl on their own video for it.
So one of the things about Super Smash Brothers, we'll say it this week, is that you can almost pick up any character and you can button mash your way. But I played a little bit of Royale with cheese, and man, I got creamed. I mean, I got devastated. And I realized you really got to kind of learn the characters in there.
Oh yeah,
so
and they all have
that's
different direction.
Way of looking at things. And then the whole kill element is really kind of threw me off there. And I'm not sure if I like it.
So that is interesting. So let's talk about that for just a minute. So the big thing that sets – so first off, if you're familiar with Super Smash Brothers, you probably get the general idea of Battle Royale with cheese. You have up four characters. You're fighting on different kinds of platforms and environments. All the characters are from Sony or affiliate properties. I guess the big daddy is, they're getting friendly, I suppose, with those guys doing Vita stuff. Yeah, Dante Capcom. So they're bringing in other people. I guess there's Raiden is in there. So, just different people are being added into the mix. Then the levels are also themed, just like you would see in Super Smash Brothers. And essentially you are doing, maybe small combos or individual hits on people, big fist hits or something, big slashy swords, and you go flying across the screen. Everybody's very floaty and light and that sort of thing. However, the difference is where in Super Smash Brothers, you would get a kill by hitting somebody so far off or knocking them off the screen down toward the bottom, and they would sort of explode in this flashy light. In this, the only way for you to get a kill is as you perform combos, and there are actual legit combos here, or as you do individual hits, you fill up a little power meter. Mm-hmm. or a super meter, I guess it is. And your super meter can fill up to 3 times, and when it fills up the first time, you get a level 1, then a level 2, then level 3. And every level, your character can execute a unique killing move, a unique super move. So in the case of... So in the case of... Parappa the Rapper. So Parappa the Rapper can do a thing where he jumps on his little skateboard and skates around, and anybody that he hits dies. They explode, and then, you know, then they have to respawn. Or in the case of the Big Daddy, he will throw the little sister, and if you happen to hit someone, it has a certain range and a certain trajectory, and if you throw the little sister and hit somebody, they die. And that's the only way for you to get kills. Mm-hmm. So the interesting thing about this is that although there are combos, and to me this is the only really questionable thing about the game, but the more I play it, the less I think that it's really a problem. You can also do throws and dodges and blocks and things like that, air, and everywhere that you move, whether you're in the air, you can use the triangle or square button to attack. X button jumps, and circle button does usually a ranged attack, but you know, anyway, you have those three different things. And depending on the direction you're hitting with the stick, you know, up, left, right, down, and whether you're in the air and doing up, left, right, down, there are different moves for all of those things. So you have a pretty good, you know, unique move set.
Totally unique, you know, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and everybody is different. Mm-hmm. So some characters might have a certain one thing, and I'm sure everybody brings this up when you know they're talking about the development of this game. But they brought on board Seth Killian, that folks might know from Capcom, formerly of the, you know, sort of public fighting game scene, to
the final boss of every Street Fighter.
Yeah, yeah.
Or very modern Street Fighter. Yeah.
And the thing that people talk about when they talk about fighting games, and especially Street Fighter and games of that sort, is control of space. And so the thing that comes through in that is that each of these characters has sort of a unique series of moves that control different kinds of space, basically. So if you're playing a character, you might need to be familiar with the move, so that if you are diagonally up from someone, you might want to do a certain move. You can maybe smash down and do kind of an area of effect move that you might have. Might, you know, hit them up into the air and then jump up and do some sort of combo throw or something. You have a lot of different options. Right. And so each of the characters definitely feels unique. As you're doing this, the levels that you're playing on, one thing that's kind of different from Smash Brothers is that the levels themselves will transform and change, that, you know, you might be... what's an example? You might be in, you know, where? Like Paris or you might be in Hades from God of War 3. And the Hades character, you know, the god of death, is back there with his little meat hooks, whatever, he's, you know, swinging things around. But then Patapons will come down and they'll start singing their Patapon things. And they might attack him and sort of knock him down. And he might go and hit them back. And then the Patapons might call down some fever rain of spears that might attack you and your characters, depending on where you are. Yeah. And, you know, Buzz, you know, from the quiz show might, you know, that's one I like a lot. Yeah. Is that, you know, it's sometimes they just do unique little things, and you can turn those on or off. There are also items like
turn them off, though.
Yeah,
I don't know.
They're really entertaining. Like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and even in Smash Brothers, people were like, "Oh, no Pokeballs or whatever," but I'm like, "Yeah, Pokeballs. Fuck the Pokeballs." Yeah, that's right. So, so there are also items, and the items, I don't think they're super Sony themed. I mean, there's like a double bladed purple, you know, thing, and there's like a ball that freezes people and things like that.
You should
and
put a light gun in there, the sharpshooter. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, yeah, and they're still going to be adding things in. So there are apparently going to be some free DLC characters. I mean, the roster is. I mean, there's a lot of people in here.
Is Sir Dan in there?
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Sir Daniel Forsythe or whatever.
I remember that being Fortescue. Thank you.
Fortescue. That's right.
I remember that being so relevant story. I remember that being a leak, but not sure if it had ever gotten confirmed. And the studio that made that game, Superbot, is literally so I'm on Overland, and it's the next major street over from me, so Sepulveda.
Sean, you may not want to give your address out, because
I mean, I'm on blank, and it is on the next major street over from me, other blank, so it's like 6 blocks from my house.
Yes.
So those the people who work there all work in my neighborhood, and I've gotten friendly with one of them because I walk my dogs and she walks her dogs, and I straight up asked her when that came out. I was like, "Oh, I'm super excited about Sir Dan," and she's like, "I can't talk about that," and then I never saw her again.
Damn.
Jasper, why the hell there's no printies in the game? What's up with that?
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
fuck. Then they'd have to get that from NIS.
They would gladly put a printy in. So but, anyway, Jeremy, I was going to say you mentioned Seth, and the one thing that I played it with a group of people, and I kind of noticed that it's a very technical fighter coming from Seth's background, and I think people thought it was a pick up and play, you know, kind of button mashy game more along the lines of Smash Brothers, and some people kind of walked away with a little bit of frustration because. I guess there's two ways you can make a fighter. You know, you could kind of make it simple and fun and immediately gratifying. But this one, if you know some characters, you can really wipe the floor with somebody. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
and
it was interesting. You can do that with Brawl too.
Yeah, that's the thing. You can really do that with any fighting game, right?
But this one really feels, I don't know. Some people, they had a certain expectation. They thought it was going to be a little bit more lighthearted with the Sony characters. And it seemed like they were a little frustrated with it.
Well, my thing, and I don't know if they fixed this in the final version, because I still haven't played the final released version, but in the beta, it was always really difficult to tell how well you were doing, because there's no real health bars, and it really just seemed like you were waiting until you got a super move, because that was the only way to actually kill anybody. And that kind of really bugged me.
Yeah, that's the big thing, and we sort of mentioned that a little bit earlier, is that the only way to get kills is by building up through your combos or through your fighting enough power to, you know, to get the super move, and then you have to actually hit with the super moves, which is the other thing. Those moves, just like in, you know, Street Fighter 4 or whatever, I mean, you can interrupt or you can miss on those, and then you've basically got to build up your meter again. And I thought originally, I was thinking, gosh, that is really weird. Like, all of the fighting that you do kind of doesn't matter until you...
The thing is, the more I've
actually played of it, it doesn't really feel that bad, because the thing is that you can, not only are you building up your meter by hitting, but you can also, you know, as you do throws, for example, there are different circumstances under which you will knock out these little power orbs from people. So you can actually steal the power from other people as well and, you know, prevent them from doing their super moves, or, you know, sometimes, you know, the best offense is a good defense. Sometimes making sure that they don't hit with their moves will put you in a position to, you know, to then land something on yours. So it's different. It's definitely different. And like I said, I was originally kind of concerned that that would, you know, because it felt, you know, the cynical, you know, first thought is, well, then I guess none of that fighting actually matters. And really, it's only the super moves that, you know, that really matter. And I haven't really found that to be the case, because I find that I'm engaged enough, you know, trying to position myself appropriately so that I can get some hits in, trying to work my way in through someone's defenses, you know, making sure to do some throws, because like I said, that'll drop down there, or being able to leech that power off of other people. And I found myself engaged. I mean, I don't really feel like it's a futile thing, because kills still happen in every match. I mean, you can still, you still have a chance to execute on those. And, you know, the thing is that as you go up those super levels, you know, like a level one, just like any of the other moves, has a certain range or a certain direction that it goes. Level two might give you a little bit more, you know, has sort of a wider reach or a bigger scope. And then the level three super move, if you hold back and don't trigger any of your super moves until the very end, you know, most of the super moves, and I haven't done all of them, but most of them will, they'll either be instant kills or they'll be pretty darn hard to get away from. For example, there's one character from Killzone. I'm trying to remember his name.
Captain.
Colonel Raddick.
Yeah.
And he has this, he actually goes into like this, he gets on one of his jump packs from Killzone 3, and then it becomes like this little reticle, like, I don't want to call it a first-person shooter, but you become, you know, in control of this reticle, and you can actually just fire, and if you hit people with that, it's an instant kill.
So it's like Snake's helicopter bazooka from Smash Brothers?
possibly. I actually didn't play a lot of Smash Brothers Brawl, so I don't know that I can answer that, but it sounds like you may know the answer to your question before you ask it, Mr. Kirby.
Jeremy, I have a question. Do you think this would ever be a tournament fighter? Does it have the balance?
I have been wondering about that. I've actually been watching people stream this, because I've been really, the thing about this that has been very interesting to me is that I feel like, and I don't really pay attention to Metacritic, but just anecdotally, reviewers have seemed to be pretty positive on this game, and it seems like one of those things.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a game that needed to happen, because everybody's like, "Oh, well, it's a Smash Brothers ripoff," and I'm like, "A, it's different enough, but B, even if it was, that is a popular enough game that it could be a genre, and it doesn't.
Why
need to
not make fight. Another one? Absolutely.
Yeah, it's like calling Mortal Kombat a Street Fighter ripoff. It's like, well, at the time maybe it was, but you know, there needed to be more than one fighting game, otherwise it was never going to evolve."
Robert, Far Cry cannot be your game of the year because it's just a Doom ripoff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I believe you mean Castle Wolfenstein ripoff.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, yeah.
Can you self-plagiarize? Id Software? I don't know. Sorry.
No. You can't.
So the other thing about this game is that it is one of the, in fact, is it the first? No, it's not the first, but it's, is it the first retail cross-buy game? So this game has been simultaneously released on the PlayStation 3 and on the Vita. Buy one, you get them both. I've been playing primarily on the Vita, which I played the beta when they were doing public betas for this game. I played it on the console, and it worked pretty well, but I've been really amazed by how well it works on the Vita.
Yeah, the whole reason I don't have it right now is I don't have a Vita, and I would rather play it on the Vita than on the PS3.
Well, just get it on the PS3, and then you have the Vita.
I saw somebody posted, it was kind of backwards, if you buy it on the Vita, you would get the download PS3 version this week for $35?
Yeah, and I think that was an error. Yeah,
oh, that was
an
error.
I believe they found that was an error.
Oh,
yeah.
Never mind.
But the idea is that you can, I mean, not only is it on dual platforms, but the two platforms compete against each other. So just like they showed at the, what was it, E3 when they first showed it, it works really seamlessly. And just like I've said before, you know, the Vita Online actually just works really well in general with things like party chat. You can do the same thing here, form parties, and you can have your two-player team matches and go up against other people. There are ranked games, friendlies. You know, there's a pretty decent tutorial. It'll actually, you know, that's one thing that really bugs me about fighting games too, because I've never really been big into fighting games, and I can't always hit all of the amazing combos. I think Mortal Kombat, the latest one, mm-hmm. was one that I really appreciated for that, because it seemed to give me more information. The combos were a lot easier. In this, they have a tutorial mode for every one of the characters. It'll actually have you perform those attacks. It'll show you how they're relevant when you're defending.
Aren't they all direction and button?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, they are.
Are there any multi-tap? Like tap, direction, quarter circle, anything like
that? No. Okay. Nope, very simplified. So that's why when you were saying earlier about like, oh, it's so hardcore, like, well, I mean, maybe, but it's really easy to pick a few moves that you really like, right, and practice them and use them and get good at them.
A few characters.
Hey, Blue?
Yeah?
Do you want to tell them what other fighting game has an excellent tutorial?
Yes, I would. It's called Virtua Fighter 5 Final Showdown. Which is one of the best fighting games released this generation. I'd say better than the original one, but it doesn't have the quest mode that I have a super hard on for. But yeah.
Yeah, one thing that this doesn't have, because I know that in Smash Brothers Brawl there was the subspace. What was it called? The
subspace emissary.
Yeah, and I don't think, at least not that I've seen, that this has anything like that. I mean, that was kind of a cool little mode, like little progressive levels and things like that. And I'm pretty sure I have to. You know what? Maybe I shouldn't say anything because I don't think this has a mode like
that. And
the
capsules. Where you'd collect capsules and stuff like that. That was really cool.
Yeah, not any collecting element.
What I loved about Smash Brothers.
There are levels, though, and one thing that I find interesting, because I'm not sure exactly the significance of it or not, but you can level your individual characters, and the levels go up into the multiple hundreds. So if you're online and you're playing against like a level 500 Noriko or something like that, you know, that person has won quite a few matches with that character, and I'm not sure if that's there just to intimidate you, or if there's
or the matchmaking is broken.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is the matchmaking, I've seen that spread, and maybe those people were in parties, or it was kind of hard to tell, but that's the only thing I'm not really sure of, is those levels, they keep going, and I don't know how high they go, but I can imagine
that's for, like, let's say you and I want to play a match, and I know you've been playing longer than I have. So, you and I could have a handicap, and I'm like, dude, Jeremy, you have to play a character that you're below level 20 on.
Yeah, and that could be. Okay. That could be. You do a lot of unlocks. I mean, so they do have a lot of, you know, alternate costumes, and they have kind of a fun little thing that's like a little, I can't remember what they call it, but you get like a little toy character who kind of comes on and cheers when you get multiple kills and stuff like that. And you know, so I have a little Kai. You know, my main is Noriko, so mm-hmm. I have a little Kai character that'll come up and do little cheers when I do good. Nice. But anyway, so generally speaking, I have found this to be really worthwhile, and I think that has borne out also in among the, you know, like I said, the press, people who have reviewed it have reviewed it popular, you know, have reviewed it well.
Most
people, I've seen since 60s, most of 50s, them, I think, yeah. have. Yeah, and you know, it's not for everybody, just like fighting games. I mean, some people like them, some people don't. Mm-hmm. But the other thing that struck me is that private people, just, you know, folks who are consumers, they would look at it and say either, like, I have no idea what this is, or, oh, it's a Smash Brothers ripoff, I don't want to have anything to do with it. I think that's the wrong opinion. And I think that if you make that decision based on just your, I don't even know what that would be making a decision based on, but it's really fun. It's really a lot of fun. Yeah. And so you can deprive yourself of that, I guess, and, you know, prove your point or whatever, but
I don't know. Go sit in the corner, fucker.
It's just something I don't get. So they're also going to be releasing DLC characters. The first two DLC characters are Kat from Gravity Rush and Emmett from Starhawk, and there's still a lot of room up on that cast list. So I'm sure there's probably going to be more, probably some paid DLC at some point. But
would be smart as if they timed it with, you know, like either exclusive games or even just games that are big AAA titles. You know, like, I don't know, Madden comes out and you can play as Drew Brees or something.
There you go. Or
well, what I was
too.
Your third level super would be a bounty, where Sean Payton just comes and gives you a couple bucks and then you
I saw a suggestion earlier today that somebody said, you know, the Tiki Man from Pixel Junk Monster should be a character. Oh. And he would never have any direct attacks. He would just build towers, or maybe his supers would be like waves of monsters that come through. I mean, and everybody, and that was one thing that I really loved when Smash Brothers. Yeah. You could do your dance to like repair things or get supers or whatever. But that's the other neat thing about it is that it's just kind of fun. I mean, it has that same appeal that Smash Brothers did, where before it was coming out, everybody was coming up with, you know, lots of like, oh, this character should be in, and this is what their move should be. And whether or not that stuff comes to pass, it's just fun to talk about that stuff. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and there is sort of that Oogie. I mean, I will be honest, there is a little bit of like a, you know, kind of a corn factor to it. Like, that's a little weird that those Patapons are in the same background space.
Jeremy?
No.
What about Invisimals?
No.
What about the dog from Tokyo Jungle, was it?
Yeah, the Pomeranian. That'd be awesome. I'd love
that. That would be an awesome level, yes. Tokyo Jungle.
You could mount your enemy.
Yeah.
That would be the level 3 super.
We're running way over on time, though, so we really need to move on.
All right.
Yeah. So a couple of other things. Let me try and keep it brief here. Last week, you know, I think we took a little heat in the comments for talking so much about racing. I ran with that, and I've actually been playing another actual racing simulator, hardcore racing sim. Got out my wheel again, and I've been playing Absolute Supercars, which came out on PlayStation Network from Eutechnix, which you may recognize the name. Mm-hmm. They go way back. They're a British developer, and they do a lot of racing games. They've done the F1 games. Mm-hmm. Actually, NASCAR the game. Yep, NASCAR the game they did. Fast Mother Truckers. They did Big Mother Truckers.
Yes.
Yep, you stole my thunder there, I was going to say. And Big Mother Truckers.
It was either me or Blue was going to bust out with that.
Yeah, someone is going to do it. And this is kind of an interesting game. I'm still not sure exactly what to think about this one. The best thing I can say about Absolute Supercars is it's actually really well executed. And I would say that it is a sort of light, L-I-T-E, downloadable version of Gran Turismo 5, but with better menus. So the thing about Gran Turismo 5 is the impossibly obtuse menus where in order to change your car, you have to exit the three screens that you're on, go back to your garage, switch your car, go back in, wait for everything to load. This is a British developer, so they don't have the same, I guess, menu proclivities or whatever. But you can get into a game a lot faster on this. It's not the same level as GT5. It's not a Gran Turismo game, but you can get into a race and it's pretty decent. You know, you don't have to worry about customizing a lot of things, your cambers and your struts and, you know, what kind of tires you want. There is some degree of customization that you can do. You can do some decals and things like that, and they're all very high powered cars. So with this particular game, I think they're Aston Martins, Ferraris, Bugattis, all.
Yeah.
Yeah, honestly, yeah, Yaris versus Yaris.
DeLorean?
No. Prius. So it's mostly high-end racing cars. And the other thing about it, so here is one thing. So it's pretty competent in terms of that. In fact, it has a really good racing line, just like in other games where you can sort of see where, you know, where you need to slow down, where you need to hit your corners, those kinds of things. And it does give you the option to turn that down or to turn it off. But the one thing I was really looking forward to, which kind of let me down, were the tutorials. There is a special tutorials mode in this, and I was hoping for. Do you guys want to know the best racing game tutorials that I've ever played in any racing game on any platform?
Microsoft Driver's Ed 98?
Nope. Gran Turismo on PSP. Gran Turismo on PSP had great tutorials. It would tell you all kinds of things about front mounted
engines. Too bad the racing wasn't very fun.
It was decent. I think it went really well. But I spent a lot of time in those, you know, because they were talking about, okay, if you have a front-mounted car and you're going up a hill, you need to do this and make sure you do this corner this way. The guy had kind of a lisp, so it was a little weird sometimes. But but it was you know, no, he was British. He sounded American. He sounded like something from like a cereal commercial or something. I don't know what it was, but he had this weird inflection
or a serial killer. Voice.
Yeah, maybe. So I was hoping that the way this game was going to stand out was they were going to have some really good tutorials. They even touted, like, they've got this Tiff Needell British racing driver who does the voices. I'm Tiff Needell, and we're going to race today. That's the second time I've gotten to do a British voice on this show. And unfortunately, what it turns out is that the tutorials are basically just you running through each of the courses, and there are quite a few courses and different ones from GT5. But basically it's a great day today on this track, and now you're going to, oh, you've just ran off the road, get back on the track, it's the black bit. Or, you know, oh, now you've gone wrong again, now more power, oh, you need to be hitting your brakes better. Like, okay, I know that stuff. Can't you just tell me something useful? Like, tell me something about, you know, I just kept thinking about the Gran Turismo PSP game where it was like they would really tell you, like, you need to be light on your brakes when you're in this situation or you can do this. But all that Tiffany Dell does is he kind of just berates you as you go around the courses. And, you know, and
so
then it's like,
totally,
well,
like a Mega Man, you should meet a man, that kind of thing.
Well, it's more like
Gordon Ramsay.
It is a little bit like Gordon Ramsay is kind of like yelling at you like, no, you did that terribly.
Does he call you a donkey?
No, but at the end, he's like, I think you're going to need to race again before you're ready to, you know, whatever. And I'm like, oh, really? Fuck you.
Fuck you.
Yeah, that's kind of what it was. But that aside, like I said, I mean, just the fact that it's downloadable, it's very convenient. The menus are easily navigable. It does have online. I think you can race with up to, like, 16
was that a
players.
Was that a download-only title?
Download-only in the U.S. I think they released it on disc in Europe
okay.
a while ago.
I wonder if
it just came out.
European version had a better tutorial. Maybe they stripped it down.
It's possible. I guess I don't really have a point of comparison mm-hmm. for it, but it wasn't, I guess, and maybe I just sort of assumed that it would be something different or better, mm-hmm. but, it, like I said, it wasn't bad. It looks really good. It's not quite a GT quality, but, mm-hmm. I did feel like after running, I mean, to the game's credit, as I, you know, let Tiff Needell just like dig into me, you know, after every time I ran the course again, I would actually do a little bit better. It actually it rates you on your cornering or your brakes or whatever. And I actually would get this percentage that would go higher every time. So maybe it was working and I just needed some tough love. I don't know. But yeah, Absolute Supercars, it's hard to really, really recommend it with Gran Turismo being as cheap as it is. They just released the XL edition. And I'm not even sure if this is $10, $15. Yeah, that's right. Blue, it turns out, your $15 Forza Horizon, totally on the spot. It was $15 at the Microsoft store for Black Friday. Amazing.
Blue was right.
I actually was able to track down my copy early at Walmart because of their little pricing glitch where the Black Friday prices were live early. So I just walked up and tried to grab Forza Horizon and Tekken Tag Tournament, but they'd already removed Tag Tournament from their systems by the time I got there.
Bastards.
Yeah, and
how did they not just? I mean, I don't understand. You walked up to the register, and they gave you the price because it was their fuck up, rather than being like, "No, we fucked up. Sorry, you can't have this for that."
Well, I mean, they kind of did that with Tekken Tag Tournament, but with Forza Horizon, it was just ringing up like normal. So they're like, "Well, mm-hmm. okay, we'll sell you that one, but." You know, not Tekken Tag Tournament 2. And, but yeah, as I was walking back towards the exit, I passed the electronics department, and I think the guy that got the games out of the case was getting his ass chewed out by one of the managers.
Well, it wasn't his fault, though. It happened nationwide.
Yeah, it was a nationwide store issue. So I don't know.
I guess it was something to do with because I didn't. They had the cardboard displays for Black Friday, you know, sitting in some of the main aisles, but they still had some copies of Forza and Tekken Tag in the case, and I got it from the case. And I guess the guy was might have gotten his ass chewed out for not removing those games from the case.
Stores are stupid. I was at Best Buy, and then this was on Monday, and they had these bins in the middle of the aisle, these big plastic bins that were coated with, plastic paper. And some guy asked, what's going to be on sale for Black Friday, as if he didn't have the internet on a smartphone. And the guy said, well, I can't tell you. It's a big top secret. And I said, why don't you look in, what's in the bins right now? And sure enough, I mean, everything in the bin was what was going to be on sale. So I don't quite understand these stores.
Yeah. But anyway, speaking of Walmart, Blue, why don't you tell me about Lollipop Chainsaw real quick, because we're like super over time and I want to hear from you before we have to go.
Well, this was another game that was $10 at GoHastings.com and the Microsoft Store. And basically it stars a blonde cheerleader, object of every male's desire type chick named Juliet, and
by the way, every male's desire, really.
Yeah,
really.
Well, pretty much. Hey, look at her.
Sage, wake up and back me up on this.
I'm speechless with rage because I just it's such a stupid thing to say that I have no.
Well,
words.
That's what they designed her to be. It's obviously sex appeal to appeal to the mass market. Everybody has their tastes and their preferences and stuff like that. But as far as like the core demographic goes, they designed her to be as appealing to the male demographic as humanly possible.
The Gramer male demographic, the retard male demographic, like which male demographic is this?
Yeah, the male demographic that pretty much like torrents porn constantly, and
so the moron demographic. So fine, whatever. Yeah.
Oh, we're gonna get some comments now. But I mean,
no,
she's.
Hey.
But yeah, I mean, the game is basically. I mean, she is designed to be, eye candy. I mean,
we've talked about it on the show before. What I want to know is
it worth $10?
Yeah.
I mean, basically, I've another game that is worth comparing it to is Onii-chan Bara, which I'm not sure if any of you guys have played, guys or girl have played before, but it's basically samurai slashing from the developers of Earth Defense Force.
Yep.
And it's better than that. I played Onii-chan Bara, and I mean, it's the production values are a hell of a lot better. The animation feels a little more fluid. Definitely animates better. Basically, you have it is a button masher, so you have XXXY will do like a pom-pom strike into a chainsaw slash. It's like there's a couple, there's like two main chainsaw attacks. One's just a normal slash, and then the A button is for like low slashes to try to hack off the legs of your enemy zombies that are in the near vicinity. And then there's also something called a pom-pom strike, which basically is pom-pom. She takes out pom-poms and whacks people with them in stylish ways. And pom-pom attacks do not do any damage, but they stun the opponent or stun the zombie and make it easier to, decapitate them. And one goal in the game is to get what's called sparkle huntings. And basically, that's when you decapitate multiple zombies in one swing. If you decapitate three or more, you'll get some extra zombie medals, which are the game's currency, which you use to buy health upgrades, ammo for your chainsaw blaster. You can buy costumes with it, when you're playing through the game, you get like about a new costume to unlock each stage or thereabouts. And then once you beat the game, you will unlock costumes inspired by High School of the Dead. And I think it was actually licensed from High School of the Dead because I saw the name in the credits. The game itself is, it feels like a combination of Onii-chan Bara, but with the, constant attacking or defending style of maybe like a Ninja Gaiden. I mean, it's like you're always in a constant state of motion. You're either drop kicking a zombie to, you know, then take its head off, or you are, you know, slicing their heads off with the chainsaw and usually sparkles and rainbows and stuff like that. And
can we wrap things up and talk about the head she carries on her belt?
Yes, yeah. Yes. She carries the head, the decapitated head of her boyfriend, Nick, whose head she cut off after he got bitten by a zombie and is about to become a zombie. And she's basically a zombie hunter, which is a spoiler for the epilogue, so it's no big deal. And basically, she's walking around with...
It's a spoiler for the epilogue, but that's no big deal.
Prologue?
I mean, it's like the... It's like the basically you're, it's a spoiler for the tutorial mission. I mean,
oh, the prologue. The epilogue would be after the ending.
Oh crap! Yeah, okay, whatever. I stand erected and corrected.
Ouch.
But yeah, basically, you know, she uses some zombie magic to basically keep his head alive, even though he doesn't have a body. And so he provides, you know, kind of a running commentary throughout the game, and they'll be talking back and forth.
Is it funny or is it dumb?
I mean, the dialogue can either be, sometimes it feels a little forced, and then there's like references that will just catch you so off guard that they're hilarious. Like she's talking about, you know, all the different monsters she killed while she was training. And she's like, I killed a bunch of Frankenberries. And, and then Nick will say, you mean like the cereal? And then she says, it's just propaganda to get you to like them. or get you to trust them or something like that. And I mean, there's a lot of...
Wow.
Huh?
I said dumb, but cute.
Yeah, I mean, it's... And, you know, they'll reference, you know, oh, she got... Oh, my little sister got me this. She must have seen my Amazon wish list. And, you know, I mean, it's...
Wait. Deagle, are you groaning?
Yes, I am. I haven't heard a single thing that's really turned me on about this game. I own it. I just haven't had the time to unwrap it, and maybe the incentive to unwrap it, and I doubt I will now.
But groaning is my thing.
I'm sorry. No, you trademark groaning. But wish list, really? That's not funny.
Well, I mean, it's just basically they're just references to, you know, there's sometimes references to popular. Stuff that you would think, oh, hey, I'm surprised they actually said this as opposed to skipping over it and just naming something that sounds sort of like Amazon.
Sure. They made a lot of pop culture references. I'm surprised they went through all that work.
Well, they did have James Gunn, right?
You know what? Actually, I didn't pay attention to who was writing it, to tell you the truth. And I did see the credits because I finished the game up about a half an hour before we recorded it. I mean, it's a relatively short game, too. Yeah. I mean, it's got about, I think it's 6 stages and the prologue. And, I mean, I finished it up in about, I'd say about 6 hours or give or take. I mean, I lost about 45 minutes of gameplay because the checkpoint system is a little messed up. It's like, you'll see like a little icon for saving, you know, it's like, oh, you get to a checkpoint and the little icon will say saving or whatever represents saving. And then, you know, if you go, you know, quit out and then you try to reload the stage, you'd think, oh, hey, it's just going to go right to the checkpoint that I was at. It starts the stage over again.
Oh.
And then if you skip the opening cutscene, it'll save a checkpoint right at the beginning. So basically you've just saved over 45 minutes of work. And the way to actually trigger the restart of the cutscene or restart of the checkpoint is by going all the way out to the main menu and then going straight into the stage select again. And it'll say, do you want to restart from this checkpoint in this stage or something to that effect? And I mean, that pissed me off. I lost 45 minutes of work on that thing.
Thanks, Suda.
Yeah.
Speaking of relatively short games.
I mean, it's
does that mean you want to play some trivia, Sean? Okay. We got some trivia.
Wait for the people. I'm sorry I keep rushing this show along.
Cuz that's what you do.
But I know Sage has a project due tonight at midnight. that she's running out of time for, and yeah, so I want to make sure she's
Sean,
not.
Sean, have I told you lately out. That I love you?
Have I told you lately? I can't remember the next.
That I love you.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, if we're talking about music, the music in Lollipop Chainsaw was also pretty good. They have Mickey playing when she goes into super mode.
Cool. Okay. So some trivia. While some bemoan the quality of Wii U launch titles, there's little to criticize about quantity, with 23 titles being available for U.S. gamers. Let's compare that to a few previous Nintendo launches. Number one, name the game that wasn't part of the trio of inaugural SNES titles. A, Pilot Wings. B, Gradius 3. C, UN Squadron. Or D, SimCity.
SimCity was part of the launch. Pilot Wings was also there too, if I remember correctly. I think it was, what was it? Was it UN Soldiers?
UN Squadron.
I'll go with it.
You gonna go with everybody? Is that your pick?
That was gonna mine too. I knew it was either UN Squadron or the other one, but I think it's UN Squadron.
I wanted to say it was SimCity, but since everybody's so sure, I guess I'll switch to UN Squadron.
Correct answer.
I'm not sure, but I was going to say UN Squadron.
Those guys with the blue helmets, UN Squadron.
Yes.
Number two, in the United States, gamers just got two games at the Nintendo 64 launch, Super Mario 64 and Pilot Wing 64. 6 months later, European players got the console with one extra game made available to them. Name it. A, Cruisin' USA. B, Star Wars Shadows of the Empire. C, Killer Instinct Gold. Or D, Mario Kart 64.
Shadows of the Empire.
In Europe?
Yeah.
Yeah, because that was actually on the box in the U.S. And because it came out like right after launch.
You know,
Killer Instinct Gold is also a pretty early title, too.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go with Cruisin'.
I'll think I'll go with Killer Instinct Gold just to be difficult.
Correct answer. I didn't hear Sage, but that's okay.
I
want the knife.
I had said Star Wars, but now I think maybe.
And she's gone.
So it was porn.
I think she's playing with her plants and got sucked into a black hole again.
Correct answer. Sean got it. Don't mess with the guy who played at the used game store. Star Wars: Shadows of the Empire.
Did you know that Japan also got vibration pack / rumble pack versions of the launch titles that we got in the U.S.?
Wow. Those lucky guys.
And there's like a Super Mario 64 vibration pack edition or something like that. I've seen it on eBay. I wonder how it is.
Color me tickled. Number three, by the GameCube's release, player expectations had increased, as evidenced by the handled system's selection of 13 titles, which flanked its release. Which game wasn't part of the GameCube's lineup? A, Smuggler's Run Warzone. B, Disney's Tarzan Untamed. C, Dave Mirra Freestyle BMX 2. Or D, All-Star Baseball 2002.
Ooh.
Tarzan.
I want to say Tarzan.
I don't remember Tarzan. I'll agree with the group.
Correct answer. Smugglers Run Warzone. Don't trust the guy.
No.
Game store. He'll lead. Number four, one of the worst launches may have been experienced by the Sega Dreamcast, where up to 40% of certain titles were found to be defective. With the replenishment of working GD-ROMs, as mentioned by Jeremy earlier in the show, how were gamers clued in? A, new cover art for Sonic Adventure, Hydro Thunder, Blue Stinger, and Ready to Rumble. B, meat market style stickers that proclaimed hot and new. C, version 1.1 on the spine of the CD case and on the rim of the GD-ROM. D, shrink wrap tinted with a light shade of red.
Stickers.
I felt like there were a lot of stickers that said hot and new on those.
Yeah, they did.
It sounds kind of... I think my copy of Sonic Adventure was post-failure edition, and I didn't remember seeing any like red wrapping or version 1.0 on the spine, or 1.1 on the spine, so I'm going to go with hot, ready, pizza things.
Also, I don't think those were the stickers were mandatory. I think the way they shipped them was they shipped the game and they shipped a sheet of stickers for you to put on them.
I said, how are gamers clued in? I didn't.
I know, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying that I think you'll find a lot of post fuck up ones that don't have the stickers on them too.
Correct answer, hot and new. Sean, I think the ones came in. I think that was underneath the shrink wrap. Because I remember calling and calling because my Sonic Adventure and Hydro Thunder did not work. And I was pissed.
Hydro Thunder.
Yeah, I was pissed off.
I got lucky. I did have some launch ones, and I didn't ever have a problem with mine.
Wow. And I heard the internet disk for a lot of people was screwed up.
Oh, you just wait until you get an issue of Dreamcast magazine, and you'll get one in there anyway.
That's right. Along with that free game, forgot what it was. You remember?
It was demo disc.
No, they had like a free, like a real simple game on there too.
Sega Swirl.
Yeah, Sega Swirl. That's right.
Sega Swirl. You can still play that online, I think.
Wow.
Sega Swirl. That's a good game.
Let's play tonight. Number five.
Like monkeys.
Where were you on November 18th, 2001? If you were like an estimated 250,000 other Americans, you were grabbing an Xbox at launch. Name the title you wouldn't have been able to pick up. A. Amped Freestyle Snowboarding. B. Air Force Delta Storm. C. Arctic Thunder. Or D. 4x4 Evo 2.
I want to say Arctic Thunder.
You bring.
Hi. That name doesn't sound very familiar to me.
I'm going to say 4x4 2.
I'm going to go with Arctic Thunder. Down
I
under.
I never had an Xbox.
What?
Wham, wham, wham.
No,
you've got to do something about that, man.
I know,
good
and
shit.
I've tried to look on the backward compatible list to get some stuff. You know what I really want is I want to get Tron. Remember Tron? Tron 2.0
yeah.
I talked about? There's
yeah.
an Xbox version of that, and it's not on the backward compatibility list, so I would have
but
to
buy
it.
But you can play that on the computer, and it's glorious.
I know. I've heard it's different, though, on the Xbox, and I'd really like to see how it's different.
You need Dead or Alive Ultimate. Best game ever.
Know, I'm gonna go with the crew. We're gonna go with Arctic 4x4.
Correct answer. Amped Freestyle Snowboard.
What?
Are you serious?
Yes, I'm serious.
How do you have a launch without a snowboarding game?
I don't know, but you have Arctic Thunder, which is snowmobiles. If that's worth anything.
I guess you're right.
You see why I would have thought that it would have been the snowboarding game and not the snowmobiling game.
All I'm hearing is a lot of wah wah.
I'll give you some wah wah.
All right, is that all the trivia?
That's all the trivia. We expect.
All right,
Sean.
It was good trivia.
Sorry to let you down.
Suffering Hero 13 wants to know, what is our first music ever purchased, first game ever bought, and first game ever completed? And I'm going to assume that this is all with your own money and not your parents' money.
Shit.
So I guess I'll go first. The first music I ever purchased was Daft Punk. Discovery.
Jesus, Sean, really?
I don't really buy a lot of music as it is. I think that was my junior year of high school that I bought mm-hmm. that. First game I ever bought, I think, was Shining Force 3. I got my first job just so that I could buy that. And first game I ever completed was Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah.
First music ever purchased, New Order Technique. First game ever bought was Mario Brothers for the 2600. First game ever completed, Adventure 2600.
For me, I think the first album I bought, I can never remember which one came first. It was either Spice World.
Oh.
I mean, hey, it was post Sailor Moon, Five Hot Chicks. I mean, it's self-explanatory.
Oh, wait, real quick, I did buy one thing before I bought Daft Punk Discovery, and it was a boxed set of Weird Al music.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did buy that.
Did it have Dare to Be Stupid on it?
It did have Dare to Be Stupid on it. It was everything up to...
did it have a song about food on it?
Had lots of songs about food. It was everything up to what was the album that had the Coolio song on it?
This should be trivia.
Oh my
Weird
god!
Weird Al trivia.
It was everything up to that one. Like every little itty bitty release he had up until then on the box set, and it was like $30. And I saved up allowance to buy
you
that.
You spent $30 on a Weird Al album, Sean?
several Weird Al albums.
On several.
Jeez.
And I was in like middle school.
Not a fan.
Bad Hair Day was the
yeah. So it was everything up to Bad Hair Day, but it wasn't like every album. It was like it was 4-disc set, and it was all those albums compressed onto 4 discs.
Could you listen to it all without going nuts, or was it like Okami?
That was all I listened to.
Dare to be stupid. Dare to be stupid.
That's why you can understand why I don't like music. So I didn't buy anything else again until. Yeah.
It all makes sense now.
The other of the first CD things, I can never remember which one came first. Was either the Spice World or Rob Zombie's Hillbilly Deluxe, mm-hmm. which that album is fucking awesome. I love it. I love it. I love it. Love it. Love it. Love it.
Still played out in every video game.
Yeah, true. I mean, I think I've got like half a dozen different games that have Super Beast on it. That was actually, you know, that being in Twisted Metal 3 was the reason I ended up getting the album. It's like I heard Rob Zombie's music, and I'm like, oh, God, I got to have this. Because I didn't know I could just stick the Twisted Metal 3 CD in my CD player and just listen to the soundtrack.
Well, did you know every extreme sports game coming out would have that song?
Did PlayStation games do the same thing that Sega CD and Saturn games do, where the track 2 would tell you that you're ruining your game?
Some of them did.
If you didn't hit skip, skip that first track, you get that high pitch one.
Awful garbage.
Oh, no. The Sega games actually had, like, the second track, the first audio track, would tell you to take it out of your CD player because by listening to the music that way, you're ruining the game. Which is untrue.
Albums did the same.
No, Weird Al albums just warned you that you were ruining your life and that you shouldn't be doing.
And first game I bought, that I don't remember. The thing I really remember doing was buying my first console, which was the PlayStation 1. I remember I traded in a bunch of Super Nintendo games to get it. And I think, you know, I think my mom was like, oh, hey, you worked this hard to get it, so I'll buy you Crash Bandicoot for it. And, mm-hmm. and then the first game I beat was probably Super Mario World. I love that game.
Yeah,
that's good. God, that was so good.
When I got my PlayStation, it was for Christmas, and I unwrapped Tomb Raider under the tree, and there was no PlayStation under the tree, right? And I was like, Dad, this isn't going to work on our PC. You know, stupid Dad doesn't know any better. And he's like, oh, well, it's for that thing over there. PlayStation.
And he yelled, Ridge like, Racer! That came out of launch, too. That was badass. I played the hell out of that. Mm-hmm. Still do. Sage, you still with us?
Yes,
Suffering Hero.
I am. So, Suffering Hero. You know, the music thing's tricky because my parents had decent taste in music. I mean, it's older, you know, classic rock stuff, but I like that. And they gave me a bunch of my first CDs. And when I got to the age where I would have started.
Strictly, what's the first one you spent money on?
No, I know I'm saying, but what I'm saying is by the time I was at an age where I would have started buying my own, everybody was already burning things for each other. So a lot of my friends burnt their music for me. So mm-hmm. I don't know if I ever bought any music with my, I mean, when I got older, I have, but not at that age. I mean, now I have, like, you know, in the last decade now. But when I was a kid, I don't know that I ever bought any of my own music, because they would give me money to go buy CDs, like, every now and then.
For being a pirate, we're saying NSYNC.
No!
Pirate rule.
Yeah, you know she's a 5 kind of girl.
Oh, God. I'm actually a 5.
Baby, when the lights go out. Blue knows what I'm talking about.
Actually, boy bands were not my thing.
I'm sure.
Menudo.
Yeah.
Menudo all the way.
There you go. Ricky
if
Martin.
It would have been anything, it was probably something terrible like Limp Bizkit or a Dr. Dre album.
God,
the Chronic. You're calling the Chronic terrible?
Yeah, the Chronic.
No,
that's classic. Yeah, that's.
I would say that the Chronic is the Chronic.
Jesus Christ. Moving on from that.
Show title: Chronic is the Chronic.
First game I ever completed is Super Mario Brothers on the Super Nintendo, and first game I ever bought with my money, not my parents' money, might have been Cruise the World, or else Ocarina of Time.
Cruise the World?
Cruisin' World.
Cruisin' World?
Yeah. Cruisin', yeah. Cruisin' the world. Yeah.
Did they do that in Cruisin' World, or was that just Cruisin' USA?
I think they did it in Cruisin' USA, and then I think they kind of did a spin-off, takeoff parody of it in Cruisin' World. I only rented it once. I've been meaning to pick that up.
I remember getting Cruisin' World just to drive the Hummer.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. It was badass.
I miss the days you could go to the store and rent a fucking video game and bring it home and play it for the weekend.
That used to be the best.
I don't.
You guys heard
days,
about Redbox? There's the these things.
Yeah, Redbox.
It's this new tech. They're outside the 7-Eleven.
It's not the same.
Yeah, you don't have
you
to
can't
deal
play
with
a game
some,
in a weekend
some dickhead cashier. You just pull it out of the machine.
I can reserve it.
Then you have to deal
I
with
thought
the...
we're supposed to put it in.
Well, you know, then you have. You know, there's nothing quite like going to Blockbuster and just checking out the boxes for everything and then thinking, oh god, are they gonna have it, and then you go and you see the box and then you see the Blockbuster case behind it and you're like, fuck yeah.
Yeah, there's something like that feeling, except for when you go to redbox.com and you look up the game you want and then you know that it's not there, but it's at the one right down the block, so you don't have to worry about the suspense.
What's at the top of my game?
Sean,
like
you're too
you.
Smart for all of us.
Jeremy, answer the question.
All right. Yes. First music ever. And actually, the funny thing is, I think I've actually talked about all of this on this show before, but the first music I ever purchased was the Sierra Soundtrack Collection on CD. I don't think I ever actually bought any audio cassettes of my own.
Wow.
So Sierra Soundtrack Collection, which is awesome. So good. You can actually find it out there. First game I ever bought is a little bit harder. I know that we had rented. It's kind of funny that you'd bring it up because I used some of my money to rent like an NES and then rent some games, but actually buying with my own money, I may have bought something on the Apple before, but I think most of that was probably my parents' money. So I'm going to say that it was when I bought my very own Nintendo Entertainment System in 1986. It probably would have been May 1986. Mm-hmm. And then the first game I ever completed was Karateka on the Apple II.
Oh, which just got remade.
I know, and I haven't played it yet.
Shame.
And I know. Well, I've heard it's different, and I've actually listened to a lot of interviews with Jordan Mechner about it, and I'm kind of interested to see if it actually works. Mm-hmm. But it kind of fell off the face of the earth after it got released, so...
Sure. Jordan Mechner interviews are always interesting, because he always seems so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You know, he reminds me a lot of my uncle, who, like, got us into, like, he sort of got my parents to get their Apple II, so it's like... Is that my uncle? Like, I don't know. He just kind of has that weird sort of like, you know, like it's sort of like a Jeff Goldblum kind of like,
He reminds
chaos,
me of your uncle,
chaos
too.
Theory dictates. Yeah.
Jeremy, I have one question about the Sierra soundtrack. Did that have the picture of Roberta Williams in her hot tub?
No, you're thinking of Soft Porn Adventure. Soft. Soft
Porn
Adventure,
I'm always thinking of porn. Adventure.
Jesus Christ.
No, it's a real thing. Is it Soft Core Adventure or Soft Core
I don't
Adventure?
Know.
I know.
Would
call
is that the game where
things.
The guy? Is that the game where the guy stands on top of the building and jacks off and women catch it in their mouth? It was like on
he
the Atari or something.
Right. I'm going to get out.
No, you're thinking of Beat 'Em and Eat 'Em.
Oh God, that was it. Oh,
really?
God.
How did I not know about this? How did that?
We used to sell it at Game Trader.
Beat 'Em and
Eat 'Em. Oh no.
No, but
that is a rare game. It's worth money.
Sierra Soundtrack Collection did have the full audio version of "Girl in the Tower," which is one of the best worst 90s ballads, I think. And one day I'm going to release a self-published album of me singing all of the ballads from all of the worst games: "Girl in the Tower," "Snake Eater." I'm going to sing them all. Sometimes I just sing "Snake Eater" for fun.
Here's some trivia. If you go back and listen to like the third episode of our show, you can hear friend of the show, Adam Malecki, sing Snake Eater in the outro. Yeah.
That sounds familiar. Did you guys have that on like a Greatest Hits episode sometime?
We never did a Greatest Hits episode because too lazy to put one together.
Thanks, John.
You have to have some great hits first, I guess, right?
Greatest misses.
And I'll answer the question for Rob. First music ever purchased was Pong. First game ever bought was Pong, and first game ever completed was Pong.
Sean, I already you didn't hear me. I already said mine.
Oh yeah, you did already see it. Well, you lied about all of them. The answer to all was
Dummy. Wrong. It was New Order Technique. It's a badass album. Right. You gotta listen to that. It's still good to.
Robert, you're missing the point.
What's that? I did play Pong as a kid. I had no coordination though because it came out. I was probably like 4 years old. And actually, I preferred Tank at that particular time.
Well, now there's Tank.
That's right. Which brings us to our question from White Mage. What, in your opinion, are the strengths and weaknesses of the Wii U? Have any of you bought one or considered buying one? Do you think the game press is being too hard on Nintendo? Beat 'em and eat 'em.
No, I don't think
that. That's kind of a weird question because everyone says, you know, the game press is being soft and, you know, everybody's hand is in the cookie jar. And so, I don't know. I think they have an obligation to scrutinize any, not just Nintendo, but any hardware manufacturer.
I mean, it's broken is the problem.
Well, I don't know if it's broken, but I think the strength may be in the short term, you know, why it's hot for the next couple months. But I think the weakness is with the next-gen consoles presumably offered by Microsoft and Sony.
As big a problem as people say it is. I think that in the next generation, we're going to have three completely different things as consoles. I think Microsoft's is going to be more of a set-top box that fits into their new, Windows Unified thing.
Right.
I think, it's going to be frighteningly similar to Surface, which is frighteningly similar to Windows 8, which is frighteningly similar to Windows Phone. And it's going to be an entertainment center that plays games on it. And they're probably, we've heard all those rumors about a Steam box, and that's probably going to end up being a part of it, is that, they'll launch with some sort of Steam service that will play, PC games that work up to a certain point.
Right.
And I think Sony's will be the most traditional, console experience as we know it, but there will probably be more of a focus on subscription-based gaming. I think they're going to try and grow PlayStation Plus because that's been their one sort of bright spot this generation, and I think they'll try and make a Sega Channel type go at it. And I think the Wii U, we're seeing what the Wii U will be. It'll be a best case scenario. It'll be a giant DS. If they can fix it, that is, I think, enough of a draw to get enough. Well, I mean, it's things like if you put a disc in it, it might not read it. That is straight up broken.
Okay.
It doesn't have an extended warranty, right? Apparently Nintendo isn't offering an extended warranty beyond
storage,
the 3 months.
You can buy those from, and you can buy those on.
Well, yeah, but I just think it's weird that Nintendo doesn't offer some sort of a warranty on this when they have on God knows what else. I mean,
I don't think Nintendo does the Nintendo certified stuff anymore. So they have no real.
You used to get a warranty with when you registered the Wii with Club Nintendo, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Well, it used to be like up until now, it used to be that you could take your Nintendo products to any Nintendo certified, not mechanic.
We need to change the tires on this baby.
But it used to be like, do you remember back in the 90s? They used to have like big neon signs in the windows they were required to have.
You'd also see ads in the back of Nintendo Power, which actually, speaking of which, just released their final issue.
Pour one out.
I'm gonna have to pick that up.
Pour one out. Back to
I don't think people are being too hard on it. What I do think is interesting is that the way Nintendo's spinning the launch is confusing. Like they put out a press release, hey, we sold 400,000 Wii U's in the first week, and people are like, is that good? Is that bad? And you start to think about it, and it's like, well, they didn't sell out, right? Because they're everywhere. Yeah. But when you think about...
And a bunch of people were buying original Wiis.
Yeah. Well, and you look at any major AAA game, if they don't break 1 million units, they're considered, kind of a failure.
Of course.
So that... It kind of makes you wonder what they were trying to say with that press release. Like, is that a success? Because that doesn't sound like a success. Okay.
Wasn't as good as the
for 1 week. That's a good number.
What about the Xbox with Black Friday? Oh, yeah. I mean, they sold 750,000, right. Was it?
And I'm surprised that the Vita didn't sell more.
Well, the Vita, was selling out though. I don't think the Vita had that many. I don't think people were expecting it to sell as well as it did. Mm. I don't think there were that many on shelves. Mm. I think I'll be interested to see what Sony does. Sony
really needs cash right now. And from what I understand, they're trying to, you know, fire sell a lot of different things with the, you know, the PS3 was 200 with, you know, a couple of games, some really good deals. So,
it's 200 with basically six games.
Mm-hmm. Which is an exceptional deal.
Yeah.
I was surprised to hear you say that it was sold out because I waffled on that Assassin's Creed bundle like all day long. And then I was finally like, oh, I guess I'll get one. And I just hit the button and bought it.
What's interesting is though is the places that I went that said they had sold out the earliest were all giving out the Call of Duty bundles,
which is like herpes.
Yeah, and I noticed Amazon.
I think people really wanted. I mean, the people who play Call of Duty aren't necessarily the people who check online first, right? So people just wanted Call of Duty that they could play on the go.
I played that. Sorry, Sage.
I was going to say, I have a friend who got the Wii U and texted me and was like, look, I got a Wii U, and he lives here in Santa Fe, so I could go to his house and play it, and I have been really busy, but I also don't think I care, because I was so turned off by how much recycling they did of games that Zombie U looked great, but until they come out with more than one new game that I would actually want to play that's not just recycled trash, like I don't really have any desire to buy the same game again that I already have just so that I can poke a touchpad and do some different things with my fingers
20 frames per second,
instead
Batman.
Of my thumbs.
My thing, and this is what everybody's saying, is that they're, you know, buy a Wii U because eventually Nintendo will put out something that you want to play on it, which for me has never been a real draw because I'm not a huge Nintendo fan, but I am a huge Camelot fan. Mm-hmm. And so the first thing I did when we got this question was like, oh, I should go check Camelot's website and see what they're working on, you know, because it's either going to be a Mario sports game, which I could give two shits about, or it'll be a new Golden Sun, and they haven't made a proper console game in forever, so maybe this will be it. And I go to their website, and they're working on a iPhone app for some local magazine in Japan, and I was like, that's depressing that's what becoming a second party Nintendo affiliate has done for them, is that they now get to do, like, they also did an interface for some 3D phone that Samsung put out in Japan at some point, and I was like, this is what they get to do between Mario sports games now, is shitty iOS apps.
Sean, they're still clap hands.
Well, so the first Hot Shots Golf was a Camelot game.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
But no, I was saying that I want another Golden Sun, and I want it to be an actual console game. Mm. But they don't get to do those anymore.
I played Nintendo Land; it was a lot of fun.
Cool. Wow! Awkward
Great.
Silence. Yeah.
No, that's it. It was a lot of fun.
Did you play by yourself with other?
No. Actually, we have. I go to a monthly 3DS meetup group, and this time somebody happened to have
Wait. Back up.
Did you just say you go to AA to say, video games?
I was expecting you to say, no, I played it with my kids. Like, you should play Nintendo Land.
Yeah, no, my kids were there. And they played a little bit. But it was mostly adults. And we get together and
mostly Jeremy shoved them off of things so that he could play them.
No, actually, I brought my 3DS and my Vita. And they played those. And they also got a chance to play the
How many people go to your meetup?
Oh, like a dozen. I mean, everybody brings their kids and stuff, too. Oh, cool. So it's a lot of fun. Oh. Yeah, I mean, I tweet about it. If anybody's listening to this and you're in the greater Salt Lake area, stop on by. It's a lot of fun. Good times. People bring snacks.
Carlos keeps inviting me to meetups out here, and I never go.
You should go. There's probably a lot of sad nerds there, but not that.
Sean, we got invited to the VGA after party. If you want to go to that.
I'd rather stick needles in my eyes, even though that is like right by my house.
We got invited to live blog the VGAs, even though it's going to be live on TV.
Wait, these are the Spike VGAs, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, you might get to meet Samuel L. Jackson.
Those are filmed right over by my house.
Yeah, I didn't quite understand, unless there's a 7-second delay, what the advantage was on that.
Well, you might be able to meet Samuel L. Jackson.
No, but from what I heard, what was it, 2 years ago when we also decided not to go? It was very much you get to stand outside for a really long time, and then once all the important people are inside, then you get to take a number, and then you get to find out that if you go get to stand in a roped area in the back of the room so that you don't really disturb all the celebrities that are there.
Yeah, I'll take a rain check on that one.
But anyway, we should probably wrap this up because we've gone an hour over.
Like a holiday present, here we go. So let's wrap things up. If you like what you heard today, you'll probably love what we write. Head on over to techgaming.com for the latest reviews, previews, discussions, new release info. Question, guys, did you know we're on Google Currents?
Good.
We're on Google Currents.
Yeah, so check it out. iPhone.
Is that current like the berry? C-U-R-R-A-N-T?
No, currants. No, sorry. It is currants.
That does not sound delicious.
It's the blue circular logo where you can read us without all the ads so we don't get paid.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, so don't check us out on Google Currents.
Hey, also, if you read the Tech Gaming website, turn off your ad blockers. You know, if you like what's going on there, that's how revenue gets generated. It's how the site happens.
No, turn them on. That's fine. You don't want to look at that. Except for the...
Yeah, I'm sick of seeing an ad for WWE 13. Your game sucks. Fix it, THQ.
I never see that. I see the ASPCA, and they're a good bunch, so hats off.
I want more boobies. I don't understand why we don't have more boobie ads.
I know. That's our audience, too. So if you like boobies, write us. Tell us.
If you like boobies, you can follow them at Samurage.
Fuck you!
You know, yeah, realize that, you know, it's just as long as the listeners realize she's not actually going to post pictures of them.
Don't know that. I'm not going to post pictures of my boobs on Twitter. What am I, 7? God.
Whoa.
I'll post pictures of my boobs if you follow me at Jeremy Lamont. Jeremy _ Lamont. Wait.
And I will post pictures of my dog if you follow me at Sean Nola with 2 N's.
And Blue wants to know where the 7-year-old boobies are.
Hell no.
Guys, I want to say the site will not load now, so I feel like everyone, not that they're listening to this live, but that, interestingly, everyone is now suddenly trying to access our site, probably looking for boobies, I'm telling you.
Okay. What?
Hey, I post trippy pictures of Sonic CD.
Absolutely. Yes, you do.
Robert, what do you post pictures of at tech_gaming?
A whole lot of nothing, but anyway. I haven't posted any pictures lately.
Post some pictures of your little dog.
Yeah,
is that interesting to you guys?
I find it cute. It's not. I wouldn't say it's interesting, but I find it fascinating that you have this little dog that you love so much.
Put a controller in his paws.
This little dog is even littler than my little dog.
She's 7 pounds. How about you, Sean?
Yeah,
16. Oh wow, she's like less than half.
Sean's dog can eat your dog.
Yeah,
it's a plus size little dog.
I think
she's not little.
I think my dog's about 6 or 7 pounds too.
There we go. Little dogs rule.
Hell yeah.
All right, I will see you guys later.